This is Jim Alger, and this is Common Sense.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
Why do the Republicans hate America?
Their only play right now in Congress is to hope the Democratic Party fails.
It's not even us in the U.S. It's us in China now.
It's us in China.
It's going to be us, Russia, and China.
It's
the EU. We are in the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
The buzzword of the day is not torture. The buzzword of the day is enhanced interrogation techniques. Can we just agree to call it torture?
Ask what you can do for your country.
Hope you're having a great day in Washington, D.C., or wherever in the world you're tuning the show in today. This is Common Sense, the show that cuts through the spin of the anti-American right-wing nuts and brings it to you straight.
During our show, we'll help you, the listener, try and understand the week's events and what we as a nation can do about it. Our job here is not to change your mind, but provide political perspective and act as your voice to power.
In short, we are here to have a discussion and help you replace the spin with common sense. Good evening, America. How are you doing? 1-888-228-4494 is our number from anywhere in the world. This is Common Sense, the show that tries to cut through the spin and bring it to you straight. On tonight's show, Obama's speech yesterday, Dick Cheney's dueling speech yesterday. Of course, this brings up the torture issue, Nancy Pelosi. Cash for clunkers is seeking its way through Congress. Managed to get guns into our national parks on the back of a credit card bill. GOP wants to throw religion back into politics again and create 2010 as the year of the Bible. And then, of course, at the end of the show is my special comment on Dangerous Dick. 1-888-228-4494 is our show. Mike, how are you?
Oh, doing good this evening.
And Chris will be with us shortly. The first item up is President Barack Obama pretty much was forced to give a speech defending his position on terror, well, actually on Gitmo yesterday. And he made some pretty strong statements saying that the U.S. went off course in fighting the war on terror. And this was contested by, of course, Dick Cheney later on.
Of course.
I'm going to read some of what Barack said. He said, "I want to solve these problems, and I want to solve them together as Americans. In all of the areas that I have discussed today, the policies I propose represent a new direction from the last 8 years. If we cannot stand for those core values, then we are not keeping faith with all the documents that are enshrined in this hall." Of course, he's referring to the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the founding of this country. And it's interesting, there will be a theme going on today as we are entering the Memorial Day weekend about what this country stands for and what we as a nation are prepared to do to defend ourselves and protect ourselves. And what the president was talking about yesterday really is, for the most part, good, I think. Where I take issue with is something that that Dick Cheney said yesterday that sounds eerily similar to what Barack Obama said. He says, the point is not to look backward. And we've been hearing this mantra from the president for quite a while. Not wanting to look back, wants to look forward when he deals with Gitmo or abuses of prisoners or
right.
Any type of investigation.
Well, we have a topic here where you know people are going to be playing politics with it. When you close Gitmo, you have, of course, the issue of where are the detainees going to go, what's going to happen with them. And you just know that somebody's going to grab a hold of that and going, oh, my God, they're trying to bring dangerous, hardened terrorists into the United States. And, you know, in all legislation, in all issues, you're going to have, you know, what people refer to as politics is going to come into play. But this is especially charged.
Well, I think it's charged, but I don't know how. You know, I don't know why it is all of a sudden that we cannot have a non-politically charged investigation. The idea that, you know, we prosecute people all day long.
Of course, but when you bring in investigation into this arena, you can have political parties that are going to want to use that against each other.
Well, yeah, but that's why you have I mean, it wouldn't be the first time. The issue that I have here is that we have a vice president and to some degree a president, although more the vice president, the former vice president, Dick Cheney, is basically saying there's no need for investigation at all. Now, I want to play a scenario for you because this is what is constantly being used. Dick Cheney wants us to believe that these terror techniques and the subversion of our Constitution was
the torture techniques?
The torture techniques and the subversion of our Constitution was somehow justified in that it got information. Let's just, I don't believe this guy for as far as I can throw him, but let's just say for the sake of argument that this is true, that the Jack Bauer moment existed. That's what we always keep going back to. Let's say the Jack Bauer moment existed. First of all, if anybody who watches 24, Jack Bauer was arrested on multiple occasions. If this took place, and to try and bring this home, let's say that someone you loved and cared for was kidnapped off the street. One of those kidnappers was left behind, and you had them in your sights, and you had a gun in your hand. Would you not shoot them in the kneecaps or do whatever you had to do to get the information that would lead you to the retrieval of your loved one? Well, I think the obvious answer is, of course you would. We, as individuals, are still human, and of course we would. However, I hasten to add that if you did, you would be arrested. You would avail yourself of the criminal justice system, and the criminal justice system does have a clause that that allows for such things to take place, and that you can have a case dismissed in the interest of justice. Thereby essentially saying the ends justify the means, that it's not in the public interest not to, to prosecute this individual. Dick Cheney does not even want to avail himself of that. He wants, prior to even an investigation being impaneled, he wants to short-circuit this.
Well, isn't Dick Cheney's position that this is not torture anyway? I mean, he said that.
Well, that's nonsensical.
So, you know, he's trying to hold, I suppose, although I have to admit, I haven't heard his entire argument on this, but he's trying to deny that torture took place, that, you know, and then at the same time, he's saying that enhanced interrogation, you can get that out of my mouth, has borne fruit.
Well, and that's the thing. And I think my bigger issue, and I'm going to go to this will be a great segue here. I've got a tweet. I hate calling my people twits. A tweet from Sweet Great Mom, who's asking the question, do you think it is appropriate for Dick Cheney to criticize Obama? I don't know. I don't know if I think it's appropriate. I think that it undermines Barack Obama, and I can't help but think of not that long ago where if you dared to step up and criticize the President of the United States, you were called every name in the book, from treasonous to unpatriotic,
un-American,
thank you, Chris, disloyal, you name it. You were run out of town on a rail by the very same schmucks that are there criticizing the living hell out of Obama now. And what really bothers me is that this is the Republican Party. I mean, to cut through all the BS, there's a couple of things going on here. One is, of course, Dick Cheney is trying to short-circuit investigation, not because he's concerned about CIA operatives all of a sudden being prosecuted. He is concerned about his own rear end getting thrown in jail. That's what this really comes down to. But there's also something else playing on here when it comes to why the Republicans are getting on board to this nonsense. The GOP is hoping this country fails. That's really what this all comes down to. If they're pre-positioning themselves that should this country be hit again, and let's be realistic here, Barack Obama gets reelected, we're talking about another 8 years, the idea that we're going to go, you know, better part of 16 years without a terrorist attack in the middle of a war on terror, which I know we're not calling that anymore, but in the middle of a ongoing multinational war against the people that do this, is pretty ludicrous. It's probably a good shot that they are either going to try or maybe even – remember, they only have to pull one off. So there's a possibility that this could happen. The Republican Party is positioning themselves that in the event this happens, They can whip up public hysteria and say, do you see? We warned you about this. We told you that you were not safe under this guy, and the Democrats can't keep you safe. And this was a very interesting thing. If you listen to the Republican banter, they'll have you believe that when Bill Clinton went after Al-Qaeda back in 1998, that it was they'll tell you, you listen to them now, they'll say, oh, he didn't really go after them. It was he bombed an aspirin factory, of course. And we'll talk about this later, but he didn't bomb an aspirin factory, and that's the fact.
I think that was the claim from the bombee, was that that was an aspirin factory.
Yes, and of course, the Republicans want to play politics at the time instead of deal with our national security, decided to undermine Bill Clinton's efforts every chance they can, very much like they are doing now. Now, when they undermined Bill Clinton's efforts, what ended up happening? We ended up getting hit. And we got hit on Dick Cheney's watch. I mean, maybe, Chris, you can come in on this. Why in the hell are these guys getting a pass for the fact this happened on their watch?
Well, Dick Cheney is just playing.
The lead monkey, too.
I'm sorry?
I said not just Cheney, the lead monkey, too. Why are they getting a pass?
Well, I don't know that they're getting a pass. I think basically what it is that the GOP, their numbers are down so low in the basement right now that they have nothing to stand on. And they know that when they use fear tactics and fear mongering, then they had a base. They had something to rally around and to, you know, get fired up about. And it seems that right now, with a dearth of leadership in the party, that they're grasping. I mean, going from
But what I was saying was that they've not been held accountable for the fact that they were in office when this happened. George Bush did nothing after the USS Cole got bombed. Nothing.
But that's all that they've done is fearmonger. They don't care about the fact that yes, they have absolutely nothing to show for it, and that this did actually happen on George Bush's watch. And it happened when Richard Clark had the memo that nobody apparently, you know, bothered to read. You know, Condoleezza Rice sat there and denied that his memos were important and that, you know, she should have read them and all this other nonsense. And it's like, you know, where is the accountability? You're exactly right. There's absolutely none.
For all this talk about the left-wing mainstream media, the media has been giving him a pass, too, and still does. I mean, no one ever sits there and says, excuse me, sir, but it was you that was sitting on vacation for God knows how many times vacation this was when you were told that Bin Laden wanted to attack the United States. It was you that did nothing.
There's 400 days that he was on vacation.
I mean, you know, sorry to interrupt the Bush bash fest here, but it's
like, oh, come on.
I don't think that that's a normal reaction that you would expect from the country to go blame the president after a terrorist attack. We didn't go and blame the president after the World Trade Center.
They blamed Clinton. They had no problem blaming
Clinton.
No, the GOP did.
Sure that
even the Democratic Party hasn't bothered to blame
him. American people did not blame him for that.
Yes, they did, and they lambasted him. They were practically ready to crucify the man when that happened.
The political party, or they meaning the American people and the mainstream
the
media?
The party, the leadership. Newt Gingrich?
I think that I don't know that anyone really went after Bill Clinton after the first World Trade Center bombing, but he did respond to him.
I don't blame Bush for 9/11 occurring on his watch. I blame them for their reaction to it. What amazed me is not that the media didn't want to pin this on Bush, because although we do point to the memos and whatnot that warned of this, there was also an entire haystack of information regarding terrorism and possible threats. It wasn't as if somebody came and told them the week before, hey, somebody's going to crash a plane in the building. He went, oh, that's nice, and ignored it. I do blame them, however, for their reaction to it. And I think if you want to talk about getting a pass, that Americans weren't in the streets after this whole nonsense of invading Iraq on false premise and not finding what we were told they were certain was there. I think there's your story as far as why is he getting a pass.
Well, I think the whole thing goes hand in hand when Cheney is running around now saying that he knows how to protect this country. No. I just got a tweet saying you still believe in the liberal media. No, I don't believe in the liberal media. I'm kind of trying to debunk that whole thing right now.
I think some of the listeners may be confusing you and myself.
Oh, well, unfortunately, our voices sound too much alike. I should get you to identify yourself when you talk.
I should speak in my fake accent.
Oh, there you go.
What exactly do you mean by the liberal media? I know what the liberal media is, but I mean with regard to this conversation, they are the only ones out there who are trying to, you know, have some sense of responsibility with getting the facts and the truth out. I mean, it is left or, you know, liberal in to the sense that we've been screaming about it for years that they're doing, you know, they're covering up and they're lying. You know, George Bush and Dick Cheney, but no one has said anything. You have Fox News out there, you know, practically swallowing every single thing that comes out of, you know, Dick Cheney's mouth and Michael Steele and everybody. They don't care whether it's correct or it is based at all in truth. So you have, like, MSNBC and... But to sit there and make it like, you know, left or liberal media as if we're just trying to go only, you know, with the party ideology.
Oh, we have a caller on line one. Caller, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
And I
tweeted last week and I decided to call in this week.
Okay.
My question is, Dick Cheney says that enhanced interrogation bore fruit. Well, how do you know that enhanced interrogation was not false fruit? Because
I've
been involved in the miscarriages of justice scene over here, and you interrogate someone enough and you put them through enough, they will tell you anything you want to hear. So what kind of fruit is this?
Well, I think that is part of what's going on. Dick Cheney is basically asking us to take his word for it and say that therefore we should just accept that what he says. And he says that there are documents in the CIA that would verify that these techniques bore fruit. And my argument would be, first of all, it does not matter. It does not matter.
The distraction.
It's completely irrelevant if it bore fruit or not. That is a matter for the trier of fact, if there is one. Did you or did you not break the law? Yes or no. After that point comes, well, was that law justified? And there's a bunch of things, whether it be interest of justice claims or in defense of others claims or even a pardon from the President of the United States himself that could be availed once we get to the bottom of this. What where we're at right now is Dick Cheney saying that we should not even bother to investigate. Now, I do have a question here from A. Hendricks NYC over on Twitter, who says, are we not compromising our national security by this continued debate? I think to a degree, we, by us having this debate right now, are not. I think to a degree that Dick Cheney doing his nonsense does. It makes the president appear weaker. It gives the appearance to the rest of the world of a non-unified country, and it does politically destabilize. One of the things we look for in other countries, now I'm not saying for a second this is going to happen here, But one of the things we look for in other countries is strong opposition movements that politically destabilize other governments. And then how do we want to get in there and meddle with that? I bring that up only because this is one of those things where if the world is able to look upon the United States and go, oh, wow, they're not unified, there's still a good deal of them that really believe this torture nonsense works, then what do we do as far as being able to rehabilitate our own reputation around the world?
I don't know. It sounds a little bit like you're saying we should all be in lockstep with the president.
No, it's not what I'm saying at all.
No, we shouldn't. But you know what?
Fractured.
We should have a vice president, a former vice president who shuts up and leaves Washington, D.C., or at least, you know, stays out of the camera. That's just not right. I agree with Jim completely that it undermines the president and it undermines our authority in the world, because here we have, hey, we elected this guy, hey, but the other guy is saying, oh, he's wrong and he's this and he's, you know,
well,
how
dare he voice an opposing opinion?
Keep in mind, the issue is not that he's voicing an opposing opinion. There are many people who voice opposing opinions. It's he's doing it with the weight of the vice presidency, which it's been a tradition in this country. When you get out of office, you shut up. You do not criticize the existing president, especially this soon into his
presidency. Well, that sounds so close to me to what you were complaining about earlier, which was the Republicans saying that if you're disagreeing publicly with the president, that's not patriotic. I'm not saying that Dick Cheney has any credibility. I think he has zero credibility, and that's where I think we should be, you know, focusing our argument against him. But when you go and say that he is speaking against the president's policy and that makes us appear ununified and weak,
It's not that he's speaking against the president's policy. It's that when he's sitting there saying that Barack Obama is making our country less safe. First of all, Dick Cheney no longer has access to the information that Barack Obama has. He could have declassified this information when he was still in the White House to prove his point, if it was so provable. He chose not to. Now, we're seeing this game getting played out on the Republican side with Nancy Pelosi, that they know darn well. First of all, I watched Joe Scarborough the other day go on about how Nancy Pelosi, as Speaker of the House, gets the same information that the president gets, blah, 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 blah. Except in 2002, Nancy Pelosi wasn't Speaker of the House. They leave that fact out. They take her current position, and they basically try to act as if she had that position in 2002. She wasn't Speaker of the House in 2002. Any information she would have been given regarding classified programs would have been a federal crime to reveal. But they play this game of they know that it's classified, so you can't speak about it. So then they nail you for not speaking about it when you're and your hands are tied. They know this game.
Well, isn't it, you know, the issue with Pelosi is not so much, from what I heard, whether she spoke out or not, but she is claiming that the CIA misled Congress. It's a pretty serious claim.
It's also not surprising.
She's also not the first one who has said it. And there were Republicans.
Let's keep in mind, the CIA claims that they met with, I forgot his name now.
Hoekstra, I think.
There's another one that came out where the CIA records say that they briefed him four times, and on three of those four times, he wasn't even in town. So, you know, one has to wonder. I mean, seriously, you're talking about CIA operatives George Bush at the time. And this, are you seriously going to sit there and say that we're surprised that we were deceived in the run-up to the war in Iraq? I mean, these guys they did not accept disloyalty. They did not accept anyone challenging their views. They wanted people to be in lockstep 100%. And I think the contrast that I'm making here is that the unmitigated gall of these same guys who demanded loyalty and demanded that, how dare you? Listen to Sean Hannity. How dare you criticize a president in a time of war? Well, I don't see Sean Hannity shutting up now. No, now it's all, oh my God, Barack Obama is the worst thing in the world. He's Satan alive on the planet. you know, this kind of nonsense that comes up from the right wing. And then when you sit there and you say, well, Barack Obama's making us unsafe. Well, Sean Hannity says that, you can dismiss it. The former vice president says that a percentage of this population starts to question whether or not their president's doing the right thing. So questioning is not necessarily the issue. But when we start questioning who we are as a country, whether or not that we're going to accept that torture as a matter of policy is okay, is crazy. It's complete utter crap. And so when we look at what comes out of this, Cheney has now admitted publicly to personally ordering the torture of detainees. But he doesn't call it torture.
But he doesn't, yeah.
And that senator who had the appointments with Bob Graham, thank you to our Twitter friend here. I wish this Twitter person had a name that was easier to pronounce because I would say it, but it's numbers and
lots
stuff.
Just call him Alphabet.
Alphabet, yeah. it is unfathomable to me that we would have a vice president who is essentially admitting to committing the elements of a international, not to mention federal, crime, and there is a debate raging as to whether or not we should look into this. I'm not even saying prosecute. There is a debate raging as to whether or not we should look into this.
Well, let me ask you the obvious question then. Why? Why isn't the new administration asking for an investigation into this?
This is where I do not march in lockstep with Barack Obama.
Well, for
sorry,
one, there's already a Senate bipartisan report from the Armed Services Committee that was just recently released, I believe, last year, that stated that they know for a fact that the conclusion was that the administration's George W. Bush's administration had abused detainees in U.S. custody at Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib. And so that part isn't disputable as far as the Senate is concerned. What Cheney's doing, and Jim, to get back to your earlier point, is he's playing CYA politics. He does not want to be in prison, and so he's trying to convince the American people, and that's the entire reason that he is so camera friendly, because we know from 8 years that the man was hardly, you know, seen or heard from. He existed, but nobody really saw him. Nobody
the
heard
man
from him.
The curtain.
Yeah.
I mean,
and now all of a sudden he can't get enough of the camera. He wants to be on every single show. He wants to be in front of every single podium, and all that he's doing is debating semantics. Was it waterboarding, or was it, you know, the enhanced interrogation practices? And it's a bunch of bull. The Senate already knows this. And, you know, there's pictures and the information that he never, ever, ever would have released to the American people. Now, all of a sudden, you know, coincidentally, now he wants to have those released, and he wants, you know, secret CIA memos and whatnot given out or declassified and given to the American people. Who are you kidding? This is just absolutely crystal clear Dick Cheney playing legacy cleanup. He doesn't want to go to prison.
It's not just legacy cleanup, because I'll say this. I don't think Dick Cheney is ever going to see the inside of a jail cell for more than a couple of hours.
Say, I agree with you that a lot of this is really not even up for debate.
I think Obama would pardon him.
He's playing politics. He is.
It's politics, and the problem is, and this is what I bring my argument full circle, they played politics against Clinton in 1998. Remember that nonsense? When he launched the war, it was wag the dog. He's trying to distract us from Monica Lewinsky. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. How dare he? Like anything could distract these bozos from whether or not Bill Clinton was engaged in extracurricular activities in the Oval Office or not. In the meantime, Al-Qaeda was putting together their plans. and they had bombed the embassies in Tanzania and Kenya, and they were plotting the attack on our soldiers in the USS Cole, and they were plotting, according to the CIA, their attack on the World Trade Center in New York. Now, you know, all this while they're playing politics. So my question is, once again, while the GOP is distracting, the president and the national security sector in trying to run around Capitol Hill and cover their butts and everything else, what is Al-Qaeda or the next terrorist organization plotting that we're not catching? What's going on while we are distracted on Iraq and this nonsense going on with Cheney? What else is being done while they undermine the president every single chance they get? That's my point, is that if you have something constructive to add to a debate, that's one thing. Look how quickly after Nancy Pelosi made this claim, and we'll get to this on the other side of the break, but when Nancy Pelosi made this claim about the CIA not being forthcoming with the facts, we're dealing with a few month area here. This is what they're yapping about. They're yapping about a couple of months. Nancy Pelosi says that in September of 2002, she was not told, but she became aware, I believe she said February of 2003. We're not talking about a big period of time here. So she does admit to knowing about the waterboarding in 2003. What she says is that they misled her in 2002. Okay. Republicans don't care about that couple of months. They just want to scream and yell that, oh, she called the CIA liars. And now they've actually launched a investigation in the Congress to investigate whether or not the CIA lied. Now, it's a kangaroo investigation. It's designed really to kind of prove that Nancy Pelosi herself is a liar. But amazing how quickly the Republicans were to investigate whether or not Nancy Pelosi was telling the truth. But whether or not we're torturing people, oh, no, there's nothing to see here. Nothing to see here at all. It's idiotic to me that these children in Congress play these ridiculous games, and that's really what they are. They're children. They're not doing this country's work, and it's absolutely aggravating.
No, I agree with you. It's pretty sad.
888-228-4494, 888-228-4494, at Jim Alger on Twitter. 888-228-4494. You can call us from anywhere in the world on that phone number, and we will get your opinions on the air, whether you agree, disagree, like us, don't like us, think we should be canceled, whatever. We'll hear from you. I want to get this on the back side of the break, but I'll talk about it briefly right now, where Nancy Pelosi came out today, and she said that she stands by her accusation against the CIA. You might remember I would call a half-assed journalism report by Politico last week that said that she was backpedaling. And then if you actually read the article about two paragraphs down, it showed that she wasn't backpedaling at all. Now she's standing by her accusations, and she says, I have made the statement that I'm going to make on this. I don't have any more to say on this. I stand by my comments, and what we are doing is staying on our course and not being distracted from it. Well, you probably should have thought about that before your news conference last week, Nancy. But this is what we're doing. So we've got Dick Cheney on his tour of undermining the president. You've got Newt Gingrich, who's trying his darndest to claw himself out of the grave. And this is the state of the GOP. Let's just attack the Democratic Party every which way that we can.
They have nothing. They have no leg to stand on. So that's what they do. They resort to the same old tricks of yesterday.
I agree. I think that, you know, we were asked a question as to why it is that we think that that Barack Obama won't prosecute, and I can give you a couple of answers for that.
Prosecute who or what?
Cheney won't investigate. Well, the Democrats have the Congress, they have the Senate, they've got the White House. If they want an investigation, they'd have one tomorrow morning. The answer to that question
answer?
Is
The man is so overwhelmed with everything else that there's
a legitimate political answer.
Doesn't have to do it personally.
It's EFCA. It's healthcare. It's a patient's bill of rights. It's every piece of legislation that they don't want to get filibustered. Look at the games that are going on in Washington right now. There's a bill. Oh, I forgot which one it is now. This probably already happened, but the Republican Party threatened to force the entire bill to be read before the vote. They determined that it would take 9 hours to read the bill and its amendments with a speed reader. So what the Republicans now are doing is just saying that we're going to slow things down just to do it. Not because they can win, but just to be punitive and slow things down. Now, frankly, I think the Democratic Party, which is, you know, world-renowned for its lack of a spine, should start calling the Republicans bluff every single step of the way and just say, you want a filibuster? Grab yourself a cookbook and get up there, bozo. You want us to read the entire thing? Go ahead and read it. Knock your stuff out. See you next Thursday.
I bet Kucinich would get up there and read the whole thing for them, because I think he has in the past read, you know, his bills.
And no, they hired a speed reader to do it so they could get it done faster. But why?
No, I know,
if these guys want to play, get my grandmother to do it. You know what? Just for that, you're not going home for the weekend. You guys can pull up a cot. You guys want to play, let's play. This is one thing that does bother the living heck out of me with the Democratic Party. They just do not
call their bluff.
Yeah, they just don't do it.
I'd propose something. Say that there's definitely this playing politics involved, but I think when you really ask yourself, you know, why don't they? I think it's because a lot of them, they got their hands dirty as well. At best, they are complacent in a lot of this that's gone on.
Of course they were complacent.
So it's like, it's in their interest as well.
Well, it's in their political interest.
If it was not in their interest to brush this under the carpet, then they would be advocating aggressive investigations.
Well, that's probably true. We're coming up on our break here, and we're going to talk about Nancy Pelosi and her standing by the accusation of the CIA, and we're going to also dig further into what Mike just said about the Democratic Party being complicit in what's going on and terror and so forth at the other side of this break. See you back in 2 minutes.
Have you added up all the hidden costs behind Walmart's prices? The estimated $1.8 billion taxpayers shell out for health care because Walmart doesn't cover their employees. The lost wages of 1.6 million women who had to take Walmart to court to get paid the same as men. The countless manufacturing jobs lost while America's largest corporation became America's biggest importer of Chinese goods. Behind Walmart's profits, the middle class pays the price. America can't afford it any longer.
Welcome to my tweet. Don't get your hopes up. It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. We have a veritable potpourri of political tweets. One might even say a tweet bouillabaisse, if one were French, that is, which would automatically qualify you to be shunned by the GOP. But anyway, right, Peppy?
The best things of life are worth waiting for.
Patrick Ruffini said, RNC quietly relaunched GOP.com last night. What you see is a temp site until they've completed branding scheme. Keywords. Quietly, launched, and scheme. It's an ultra-super-duper double-secret background plan. Shh, don't tell Michael Steele. Peek it. David Elkaness said, today's leading conservative icons are Sarah Palin, Joe the Plumber, and Miss California, an embarrassment of riches. More like the Three Stooges, Dave. Twitter Roadkill Refugee said, Pat Buchanan says he likes Rubio for Florida governor, that Hispanic or Cuban fellow. Good Lord. A not exactly progressive tweeter said, obviously, you wouldn't know, because you're Stalin fascist socialist the gays, you big jerk. To which Spinelli replied, articulately, logically argued. From CNN's Ed Henry, nothing binds New York City subway passengers together faster than disdain for a fellow citizen's unfortunate choice of thongs. Shock has a definition. Twitter, noun, a social media service where famous celebrities pretend to have a personal interest in millions of customers. And finally, from Meghan McCain, her very own self, why is Newt Gingrich on my news crawl this morning? Last time he was interesting, I hadn't hit puberty yet. Ooh, snap. Tweet revenge. Take it away, Jim.
Thank you very much. Gotta laugh. That's awesome. 888-228-4494. 888-228-4494 is our number. This is Common Sense. We are currently discussing the Pelosi CIA manufactured story of the last week and a half. And they say manufacturing jobs are dead in the United States. GOP does their best to manufacture garbage every chance they get. As we said before the break, Nancy Pelosi says that she stands by her accusations against the CIA that they misled her in September of, well, in August of 2002, and that they did not inform her of the waterboarding. I say, so what? I don't care. I don't really care if everyone in Congress knew. Was there complicity? Yes. And of course, now the American people will stand up and say, oh, how dare you? You were all complicit, blah, blah, blah. You know what, people? Pay attention when I say this. You were complicit, too. All of us were. Why? 90% of this country supported George Bush. 90% after the attacks of 9/11. Yes, we believed him. Yes, to a degree, we were misled. But I would submit that no one really cared how we got to the truth of what happened, and no one cared about anything other than just stopping the next attack. That's all we cared about. Remember where we were. The World Trade Center had been taken down. The New York skyline changed forever. The tip
people
of Manhattan
died.
Was 3,000 people died. The tip of Manhattan was still covered in smoke for months as that pile burned for months. The Pentagon was severely damaged and was in the process of being rebuilt at this point, actually. We were coming up at the time that Pelosi was talking about, we were coming up on the one-year anniversary of 9/11. The war in Afghanistan seemed to be relatively over at the time. And realistically speaking, it was almost like, you know, we went in there and we picked on the disabled kid and kicked his butt real fast and we wanted to beat up someone else. That's kind of the mentality. It was oorah. Very redneckish, I would almost say. Very much about let's just go fight and no reasonable, rational approach. Anyone who was reasonable or rational was considered wimpy, weak, un-American. Anyone who dared question this government was pushed aside, not just by the government, but by
the
Americans.
They were vilified. Anyone who dared to criticize or disagree was outright vilified.
With, yes, but the thing is, they were done. This was done by not just the media or political operatives. This was done by your neighbors, your friends, your family. This was done by Americans. We, the people, forgot who we were as a nation after 9/11. Now, where I say that we split here is that we're allowed to forget. We, the people, are allowed to forget. That's why we have who we are as a nation enshrined in documents that can't just be thrown out the window, or so we thought. That we can always go back to the fabric of this country, or so we thought. So when we look now and we say, oh, it's all these people's fault, think about what would have happened to the soon-to-be former congressman who would have stood up and said, this is wrong. They would have been thrown out of their butts. The Democrats would have lost virtually every house in this, and every seat in the Congress. And so was there some complicity? Of course there was.
I
don't know why the Democrats don't just say that.
I disagree with that in one area. When immediately following 9/11, we as Americans and unfortunately Congress and the president acted, well, we as Americans were desperate. Obviously, we didn't know what happened and whatnot. But Congress and the George W. Bush administration acted recklessly out of desperation. And that's the problem I have. You know, Americans, yes, we were to a degree complicit in doing this. But the citizens, the everyday average citizens, our job isn't to govern. And so we did have an emotional response, as one would expect when, you know, a national tragedy happens. However, that's why we elected those officials. And it's those people, George W. Bush, you know, Cheney, and their appointees, Rumsfeld and Gonzalez, who bear the responsibility for acting less emotionally. You know, they are the ones who are supposed to get
there.
Where
were the protests?
I'll surprise you guys. I'll agree with both of you.
Huh?
Jim is saying here that that the people were perhaps blindly bloodthirsty. And I'm sure there was a level of that. I think that that's part of the reason why we accepted, you know, blundering into this war. And then Chris is also at the point of that just because the people were angry and looking for a response doesn't excuse, you know, warmongering, especially jumping into a war that had nothing to do with it, and then trying to act as if it did. Specifically, they tried to act as if Iraq had ties to Al-Qaeda and that they linked that to 9/11, and which we now know is completely false. So you do have a couple of problems here. You have gross irresponsibility on the part of leadership, and then you also have the fact that, well, what if you were a senator and you wanted to stand out against this, but you felt that doing so would mean you're out of office?
You'd been out on your butt. There's zero doubt in my mind. The American people would not have tolerated for a moment the unpatriotic, treasonous senator who would have stepped forward and said, this is all a crock.
George Bush said it himself. You're either with us or you're against us. That was the mentality, and that was coming from the office of the president.
And we went for this. And look at it. Like I brought this up, I think last week or the week before. Look at the Dixie Chicks. Look at the visceral nature in which people came out against. Now you can write off parts of the South and say, well, they're rednecks down there. But the reality is that mentality of, you know, we're going to go kick ass and take names because we're the greatest badass country in the world and no one's better than us. Now, half the ignorant fools would say this and never left this country in the first place. So it's kind of
during a national tragedy, we do have to rally around something. We have to come together. And there is, to some degree, nationalism that it's almost necessary as part of a healing process. However, it went grossly astray when, you know, it then turned into, as you're saying, you know, some complicity upon, you know, with the American people with going with the president. But I don't believe that we should, you know, accept that much of the blame for where, you know, where were the protests. There were people protesting there. I know,
but
I was one of
nowhere
them.
Near the majority of the people. I mean, you have to admit this. The majority of people that currently now oppose the war supported the war back then, and they support it now. Granted, there is a slight difference, and they can say, well, you know, I was given information. But even I remember saying, standing in my kitchen after George Bush gave his infamous State of the Union address, and my response was, at the time, if what he's saying is true, let's go get him. But I don't see any evidence that what he's saying is true. That was my reaction at the time. Now, that's when it wasn't a cool thing to say. So I said that publicly, that we had to go and look into these allegations. And if what we're hearing is true, then of course we would have to do something. There's no way on God's green earth we could have ever allowed Saddam Hussein to get his hands on a nuclear weapon. Come on. I mean, that wasn't going to happen. But here's the problem.
Except that, yeah.
as we can say that, you know, academically we can say, hey, we couldn't let him have a nuclear weapon. Problem was, he wasn't getting a nuclear weapon. And we kind of knew he wasn't getting a nuclear weapon. Now, we didn't, but our government kind of knew he wasn't getting a nuclear weapon.
No. But we know that he has these things, and not only do we know he has them, we know where they are.
I and to use the words of the infamous Albert Gore Jr., it's not what you know. It's what you know that just ain't so.
Oh, I don't think that he believed that. When he's, I was quoting a good old crummy rummy there.
Yeah.
But I you can't help but look back on this and think of what we did have a unifying moment, although unfortunately it was around a tragedy. But
usually is.
You can't, you know, help but wonder, well, what if we took that, whatever you would call it, that energy, that rallying, that, you know, cry for change or to do something, and we used that for something positive.
Well, we've had this conversation, and other people have too, that the only thing George Bush told us to do is go shop, which, granted, was a lot more important than I would have given it credit for at the time, in averting a calamity, in that we're in one right now because people won't shop. But I think there also, you know, wouldn't that have been the time to step forward and talk about an excellent transition point? Wouldn't that have been a time to step forward and say, you know what, we're going to raise CAFE standards to 40 miles per gallon on cars?
Exactly. Why didn't we take that and make our dependence on oil a matter of national security and tell people, hey, here's something that you can do to help? Because you can't say that the people don't listen. I mean, Barack made his campaign and his candidacy about getting people's attention and having them listen to what he had to say. But if you have a complete failure of leadership and nobody suggests anything positive, it's hard for that to just come out of nowhere.
Condoleezza
Rice, just for the record, did wholeheartedly endorse and subscribe to George Bush's words when she went shopping for $400 shoes the day after.
I think that, you know, the Republican Party will have you believe that the Democrats did nothing but berate George Bush for 8 years. And the reality is we really didn't do that. We really kind of didn't berate him for 4 years. Because it wasn't until, realistically, I think it started. I think the emperor has no clothes moment was when they came out and said that there were no WMDs in Iraq. And how we were not all just ashamed of ourselves after that is beyond me. But then, of course, came the ultimate display of incompetence, putting it mildly, criminal incompetence, in the death of our citizens in New Orleans and Biloxi and Alabama and Florida. And for all the talk about what went on down there, you can say that New Orleans was a corrupt city. There's a lot of truth to that. And you can say that New Orleans could have done more. There's a lot of truth to that. However, I was there. I saw it with my own hand, with my own eyes. And I can tell you that if you take New Orleans out of the picture of what happened, because that's mostly what people saw down there, there's still a couple hundred more miles of our coastline that was gone and people killed in multiple states, not just New Orleans, throughout Louisiana, throughout Mississippi, throughout Alabama, throughout Florida. You cannot blame this on the local government in New Orleans. You have to say there was a federal response needed. And when I think the media, who really felt compelled to follow George Bush to the gates of hell and back, finally, I want to say the actual moment was Anderson Cooper, when he was Anderson Cooper 360, when he was down at the Coliseum in New Orleans, you know, screaming, where the hell is everybody? Why is there no help getting here? And it was like day four or five or something. And I think that at that moment it became, you know, very much, oh, this guy really is an incompetent boob. We are kind of on our own here. And
good job, Brownie. Good job, Brownie.
Well,
Michael Brown.
You know, that's a political spin too. I mean, the whole thing about Brownie is ridiculous. It's Brown oversaw five hurricanes the year before without a hitch. Yes, there were problems, but it wasn't Brownie's fault in and of itself. There was multiple issues that let that happen. I'm forgetting the spin out of both sides of the argument.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I think that the key point here is that up until August 28th, 2005, George Bush pretty much got a free ride. This guy was going to be a non-reelected, incompetent boober president with nothing really important to show for himself until 9/11. The reality is 9/11 defined George Bush.
Right.
And
his response to it.
And then people still, in 2004, just barely, but they felt enough for him to push him into the White House for a second term, which really just...
That is amazing.
That's, I'm sorry, but that just tells you how stupid voters are.
If you wanted to back up your position, but we all share blame for this. That's it right there. This guy got reelected.
Yeah, he got reelected after we didn't find the weapons of mass destruction. And so now, I wanted to go dig deeper into this. We could have done something about greenhouse gases. We could have done something about our dependence on foreign oil. You know, if you are listening to me right now and you're driving an old beat-up pickup truck because you think it's cool and you don't need it, it's not something you need for work, it's just I think it's cool because I got my big old truck. I'm sorry, but you're an idiot. When gas hit $5 a gallon, people got shocked a little bit and said, oh, my God, maybe, perhaps, I don't need to drive my living room to work with me.
How soon we forget the lessons of the past.
And
we've been through this before.
And we're going to be through it again. And so Barack Obama, just this week.
I just want to say one thing real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Americans were duped. And for exactly the reasons that we've just been discussing. And it is shameful that George W. Bush's administration and Cheney, who's now defending it, betrayed us. We were betrayed. And we are and we should be outraged. And for with the comments, Jim, about how, Americans are complicit in that, to some degree, yes, I do agree with you with that. But, when we don't have habeas corpus anymore, when that right has been taken from us, and when we have laws that allow Americans to be, arrested and imprisoned but not, charged and not given counsel, then that scares people. It scares people very badly.
That doesn't apply to Americans on U.S. soil?
What's that?
I believe the Supreme Court ruled that that if you're an American or if you are on U.S. soil, you must have those rights regardless. I think that we did manage to somehow cling on to that.
But when this happened and people were realizing that, oh my gosh, my rights are being taken away, and we had the American Taliban, the guy in California who I forget his name, but
John Walker Lind.
Yes, thank you. When it happened to him that he was charged, and I understand that there's some mitigating circumstances with his situation, but when Americans realized that we could be tried or we could be thrown in prison and basically just disappear off the face of the earth, without an attorney, then that scared people, and it scared them enough to. You have to kind of consider that as a factor of why there weren't crowds in the streets, saying, hey, what George Bush is doing is wrong.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Chris. When you say that, and while I will have to say I think that's a little bit of a leftist view of this, I also don't think you're that far off. When you say that, when we talk about crimes that, people being taken off the street by executive order of the President of the United States, which is what happened in that case. Well, the Justice Department, the Attorney General. When you hear about people being tortured on direct order of the Vice President of the United States, when you hear about wiretaps of people's phones being ordered by the executive office of the President, does this not sound like other countries that we were raised to hate? This sounds like KGB and Russia nonsense.
Wouldn't that make people even more likely to vote against this guy than less? Or are you really saying that people felt so intimidated that they felt compelled to go in there and vote for George Bush a second time?
Well, I think I think that Chris is holding a leftist view here, but I also believe that she's not that far off. When you see the attacks that are going on right now, granted they're a lot more political based, but when you see attacks going on right now on groups like Acorn, when you see the FBI files that are out there on all these groups that organize and protest to get people, to get the people motivated to put a stop to this nonsense, then you start to wonder, well, wait a minute. You know, maybe me and you have had this conversation, Mike, that the biggest problem that I've got with George W. Bush is that he made the left right. Is in so many things, what used to be the left-wing lunatic argument, you look at it now and go, oh, my God, they were right, and this is ridiculous. You really got to wonder.
They're right in so far as that you have to, you know, the government's success they're right in that you have to watch out how much power a government is allowed to obtain because it will abuse it.
But not allowed to. They did. Like that's the problem. They did, and it's the illusion, in addition to the fear that's been pervading our country.
Intimidated into this. There were incidents, but I don't think the feeling on the street was that, I better do this, or the Gestapo is going to come and pick me up.
No, I don't think it wasn't a conscious thing. It was one of those things where you hear enough stories, a tidbit here, a tidbit there, and you kind of start to wonder, in a sense, because you know what? We have Big Brother isn't watching, but what happens when Big Brother is watching? What if I'm on the internet and I email my college best friend and say, hey, I hate George Bush. And you know what? Then I watch on the news that, you know, somebody's speaking out against the president and all of a sudden they're being labeled un-American. You know what? It's not that far of a stretch.
There is the Piranha thing. I get you.
I think you guys are stretching a bit far. I think we find absolutely no lack whatsoever. I mean, go to a college campus and read the paper.
So hung up on your college campus.
Good. MSNBC. Listen to, Keith Olbermann rant on about how,
Post 2005, my friend.
Rant on? How about righteous outrage?
The Bush presidency was, nothing we got to be proud of, but it wasn't he wasn't Hitler or Stalin here. I mean, we could take this a little too far.
I'll give you Stalin. I'm not quite willing to go for Hitler.
Hitler, there's a lot of parallelisms that I could easily make, and I've avoided them just because I don't want to go there.
No, are there? Yeah, but Chris, are there parallels? Yes, but there's parallels to Hitler and me. I mean, we're both human. We both breathe air. But there's reality, and Bush was not, for as much of a trained monkey as I think the guy was, he was not walking people into concentration camps and wiping off an entire group of people off the face of the earth. So
I will agree with you that there were abuses that took place, and that we need something now to make sure that this type of thing doesn't happen again, and we're not really seeing that. And we're seeing it shift, but what's going to keep it from shifting back? What do we have in place to limit this type of thing?
When our basic rights are summarily dismissed, that's a scary thing. And that was our reality. Whether you want to admit that or not, that was our reality. And the parallelisms still, or like I'm not going to go there, but my point was that Americans should have been in the streets screaming yes. We should have been protesting yes. We should have never reelected that stupid fool, but we did. And I'm just in some sort of way defending the fact that, our voices were silent. Mine wasn't necessarily, but and collectively
you
as a country.
Managed to avoid Guantanamo.
You know what? I did, but and I have friends and family that will testify on a stack of Bibles that I would, every so now and then, I would always say, hello, FBI, hello, CIA, because I knew about FISA, and I would also then say, hey, listen, if all of a sudden I'm MIA, you know, can you please go look for me at Gitmo? It was a tongue-in-cheek
but
kind of joke.
But doesn't that more call
the
question your sanity as opposed to an actual policy of the administration? First of all, you can't use the word FISA. FISA stands for Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and FISA requires a court and a judge and probable cause, even though it's done in secret. That's not the type of if Bush and Cheney were going to
FISA. What we know now is that's not true. That's not true what we know now. We were being recorded, our emails and whatnot.
Let me finish the thought before you tell me that I'm lying about it. If Bush and Cheney had been going to the FISA court, as they were supposed to under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, then I don't think any of us would have a problem because they're respecting the balance of powers. However,
exactly.
They were not doing so. They would basically, you know, we see this on Law and Order. We kind of go, oh, that's kind of funny. But the reality is this happens every single day. The police officer, tell me if you recognize this scene, the police officer shows up at the doctor's office or telephone company's office or anybody's office for that matter. And they say, I want this information, this private information, this person. And the person, for a brief moment, feels that inner American in them and says, you have to get a warrant. And then the police officer turns around and says, well, we can get a warrant, but that means we're going to have to bring all kinds of agents in here and go through all your records and do all this other stuff. And before you know it, they hand over the information voluntarily. That act of handing over the information voluntarily should be illegal. It should be against the law for them to do that. My phone company should not be allowed to hand over my records without a warrant signed by a judge. So I ask you again, where are the American people when it comes to respecting privacy? The fact that private companies are now getting all your information, and then the police departments or law enforcement agencies, or to take Chris's case, FBI, whoever the heck wants your information, goes there and bullies, you know, Joe Schmo, who's buying the gate, and to release this information, and now it's out there. And where the concern for this really comes in, I don't care. I'm not doing anything. I mean, anything I'm doing to piss anyone off is being done right here with the microphone in front of me. What is the real concern here is that if they want to silence opposition, we saw this during Watergate, where the president was using people as his own personal security force to kind of go out there and get things done for him. I think that these are things that there are valid concerns that, you know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so that's why we have a balance of powers, which we saw under the Bush administration was that balance get eroded. You had a rubber stamp Congress, and then you had a complete ignoring of the judiciary. And you basically had a unitarian executive, and that's where you start to talk about the Hitler-esque qualities of what was going on with Bush.
The Senate Intelligence Committee in April stated that it's going to have a panel to get to the bottom of the National Security Agency's allegations, or the allegations that the National Security Agency had improperly tapped Americans and domestic communications of American citizens. And here's the quote from Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Dianne Feinstein. We will make sure we get the facts. And so my point is we were being improperly tapped, wiretapped, and it goes a little bit further into kind of a topic that deserves.
Well, we know she was.
But we were. And so our phone calls were being tapped, our emails were being eavesdropped on with any foreign communications and whatnot without
any kind of order from a judge.
Let me tell you what my issue is with that. And tell me if you agree. Either one of you. I don't care that the NSA listens to my phone conversations. I don't care that CIA hears my phone conversations. I don't know why any of us should care. Where my problem comes in is when that information is then given to other individuals, be them other law enforcement agencies or for future prosecution or released to the public to embarrass me or something like that. I think that's where you cross the line.
Well, what do you think they're going to use the information for?
What do I think the NSA is going to use the information for? I don't think the NSA gives a rat's ass about what kind of pepperoni I want on my pizza. I don't think they care.
But who are you emailing about your pepperoni on your pizza?
Let me back you up a second. Before we start vilifying the intelligence agencies that bust their butts every single day to keep this country safe, and I know some of these guys. They are the most hardest working people you'll ever meet. And these guys fail one time and thousands of people are dead. They have to be right 100% of the time. The people they're fighting only need to be right once. So before we start going and vilifying the entire intelligence apparatus of the United States government, let's step back and realize what we're dealing with. The NSA in and of themselves is not a threat to us. They're not a threat to the people. They serve us, for crying out loud, as does the CIA, as does the DIA, and all the other intelligence agencies that exist. The issue, I say once again, comes to the tearing down of the Chinese wall that prevents the CIA or NSA, that prevented the CIA or NSA or anyone else from divulging that information to local law enforcement. And the interesting dichotomy you have here is, well, what happens if the CIA or NSA is monitoring a cable and they find out that someone's plotting something in the United States? Then they're going to hand that over to the FBI now, thanks to the Patriot Act, and the FBI proceeds to do a criminal investigation. That wiretap is used against them in a court of law. Well, that's one way that we as Americans can go about this, if we accept that. The other way to go about this is, well, you got the information, this person is part of a terrorist cell in the United States. They are plotting against the United States. They are an enemy combatant, and we're going to dispatch a military unit to go shoot them. Those are really your two options here. And as you can see, you've got the worst of both options. You can prevent the attack militarily or through law enforcement, but not have a conviction or a criminal investigation, or you can have gotten this information questionably and proceed with doing things the quote-unquote civilized way and giving these people a trial and so on and so forth. So
are you talking about how you would be able to use the information based on how the so-called fruit from the poison tree?
Yeah.
Whereas if they, you know, overstepped their bounds, they illegally wiretapped, but they stopped a terrorist act versus they illegally wiretapped and they heard something else that was illegal. And now they want to go over after that person, but they didn't legally obtain that wiretap.
Well, let's just say, for example, using the same argument we had before, the natural evolution of how this works. Let's say the NSA is recording every single phone conversation going in and out of your house. Okay, so you tick off a police officer, now wants to target you for whatever. The police officer knows the NSA is recording all your phone conversations, so he serves a warrant on the NSA. He copies your phone conversations. Who needs a warrant to tap your phone? They don't care. They'll go serve a subpoena.
And that's my point, exactly. Once you give up that right, you have no control over the information. You have no control over the information. Once they have that information, it is out of your hands. And my problem is when the government abrogates our rights as citizens, then that's a problem. I'm not attacking our government employees. I know that they're doing their job. The NSA is doing their job. But it doesn't come down to them. I'm who I want to hold responsible and who I'm angry with and attacking is the administration, the people who, the people who authorized that. And to trickle down to, what's somebody going to do? You know, the police officer is he going to go and wire, or you know, serve a serve the NSA and get my information? It's not going to matter if I if it comes out in public that I order pepperoni on my pizza, but it will matter if, say, I'm, you know, cheating on my husband and running for a political office, or, you know, doing whatever. The point
two things
is,
I recommend you don't try.
You do have a good point there in that, you know, that you should have the right to privacy.
Well, that right's been severely eroded over the years.
It's true.
And there are
arguments kind of in between, you know, in between we're being like Nazis and, you know, we're giving up all our rights. There are good and bad side to a lot of things that are going on in order to try to fight crime and terrorism. And it is worth discussing. It is a problem. Regardless of what I'm saying, do I want somebody recording all of my phone conversations? Even if I'm not doing anything criminal, this could be embarrassing. I could have private habits or things could be going on in my life that I don't want people listening into, that I don't want to happen. We're seeing this happen more and more often now, especially with the increase in technology. For example, I believe you were telling me, Jim, about to protect New York, they have machines that are reading all the license plates coming in and out.
Yeah, they come now, in as you're coming out of the tunnel and across the bridge.
That's not necessarily a problem. I mean, the license plate is public information. We're not tapping anybody's phone. But then even that can be abused.
Technology is outpacing the law.
It's true.
I mean, they now have literally where they can put on police cars, and that's what they do. The NYPD uses magnetic cameras. They stick them on the front hoods of the cars, and they park the car at the outside of the tunnel so as cars can pass to get the license plates. But what they can do now is they mount these things up on the light bars of the squad cars, and they can drive down the street. And the computer automatically scans and runs every single license plate that squad car passes.
Right. But in general,
at some point you have to say we're becoming a police state. And I know it's New York is actually a really good example of this. You've got, I forget what the number is, but
depends on how the information is used and controlled, because the courts have found time and again that if you are collecting information that is in public, for example, I'm walking around with a video camera, police officer scanning license plates, that's not private information. And yet it can still be abused.
Well, it's not private information, but it's private information you are required to have.
You are doing that in the open. You're not doing that personally. I'm not sending, you know, while I'm married, I'm not really married, but, you know, in for the theoretical, if I'm married and I'm sending my boyfriend on the side an email and the government's watching, then you lose control of that information, and that was personal information. It was not meant to be public, and it was illegally, as far as I understand it to be, obtained. However, the government is doing it, or the government has done it, and now the Senate Intelligence Committee is trying but they actually are having a hearing on that, and the hearing is not open to the public, which, I mean, it obviously shouldn't be, but this has already happened.
I know.
This is part of why I'm angry.
We can go on about this all day, and I think that what I was going to say was that New York City is a good example of the quote-unquote feared police state. However, it's done very responsibly. There's an enormous amount of police officers in New York. There's video surveillance all over the place. You really do feel secure when you're in New York. And for the most part, they don't abuse it that I'm aware of. Now, that could change. So there may be news coming out that may change that. But I think that from what I can tell, Ray Kelly in New York has got some pretty good safeguards to avoid abuse. At the same point, simultaneously, we have the situation where in one city in the Northeast, they ran over 900 background checks on various Hollywood celebrities to get their personal information. So when you give a person, I mean, a police officer, a law enforcement officer, CIA, NSA, anyone, they're only human. I mean, they're going to make mistakes like any other human being. And I know that we live in a country that if you make a mistake, it's pretty much you're damned for life. And I get that. But people do make mistakes. And we need to understand that and have safeguards in place to prevent that. As I said earlier, We'll leave this segment here with this. When I described the two different scenarios as far as a terrorist cell in New York, because that's what this is all there to fight, then we are capable of drawing a Chinese wall. There are the laws of unintended consequences. And this would be a very bad segue into a subject that's getting on my nerves increasingly. When you write a law for one thing, and then something else happens from it. For example, we're seeing now in 7 states across the country, the prosecutors are filing adult-level criminal charges against teenage girls for taking pictures of themselves and texting them to their boyfriends. They're charging these teenage girls with pornography and possession and distribution of pornography. This is not what the law was intended.
Where's the DA here to decide whether
the DA's doing it?
That's just
they're
amazing.
Making a name for themselves. They are grandstanding politically on the backs of other people's daughters, and they are prosecuting. It's been we've been on this kick in the United States for a while to prosecute teenagers as adults. We will first say that they don't have the mental capacity to agree to certain things, for example, sexual consent or to drink, or they can't vote until they're 18 because they don't have the mindset to do so. And yet we will charge them as adults for almost anything. It used to be just the most violent and heinous of crimes. And slowly but surely, just like throttle creep, slowly but surely, it just creeps up. You give them an inch, give them an inch. Next thing you know, they have the whole driveway.
I don't know that they're going to understand throttle creep out there, but you could use slippery slope.
Slippery slope works very well, too. And this is why, you know, groups like the NRA don't give an inch. Because they know if you give one inch, they're going to take the whole darn thing. And when we've got, you know, district attorney, first of all, I think that any district attorney, I don't care who you are, if you are prosecuting a teenager, male or female, for taking pictures of themselves for possession of and or distribution of child pornography, I would argue that personal rights come into play, personal privacy rights come into play. Am I not allowed to take a picture of myself if I'm under the age of 18? I mean,
it sounds crazy.
It's beyond crazy. And these kids are going to have to register as a sex offender. Now we say, well, it's just a couple of them. You know what? That's a 13-year-old girl who can never leave the United States because they can't get into any other country as a registered sex offender and convicted felon. That's a 13-year-old girl who will never be able to vote in many states in this country, never be able to hold a job in any political office, in any police or law enforcement capacity, fire department, public sector jobs. You are destroying this teenager's life because she took a picture of herself and sent it to her boyfriend.
Right. I don't think it's the law.
It's unbelievable.
So much as is individuals. The law is always going to depend on individuals to have some level of common sense, which unfortunately they often don't have. I mean, we even use the term reasonable in defining things legally. Now, how can an unreasonable person looking at it come up with something that's reasonable? You would think that there would be, you know, that the DA is there to decide what's to be prosecuted and what is not worth prosecuting. And you would hope that that individual would have the capacity to look at this and say that's ridiculous. And then if that failed, you would hope the judge would have the ability to look at it and say this is ridiculous, I'm dismissing it. But how do you protect against something like that?
No, and when you get to the self-righteous indignation, how do you protect against it? It becomes a real problem when these people decide they want to make a big to-do over these various these crimes, and they want to call out the media, call out the press, and hold their press conference on the steps. They can look nice and official. They can run for the next office that they're getting to because they're protecting your children. They're protecting your children from themselves because they're taking dirty pictures of themselves, and who knows who may be in possession of those dirty pictures 30 years from now. So instead of being in possession of dirty pictures 30 years from now of when I was 13, we're going to be in possession of a felony record and have to register as a sex offender in every county I go into. Wow, that's protecting our children. That's great. It's an awkward segue over to this subject, but it does go into the laws of unintended consequences. And when legislatures go and they craft this legislation, we're going to have In one of these weeks upcoming, we're going to go more into detail about this particular subject and other ones as well. We're going to try and get someone from Class Kids out here to talk about this. And I think it's something that people do need to understand about what's going on when they hear that. And this is really, I think this is the bigger issue of this is politics being injected into almost everything in society these days.
Well, we do see a lot of, I think you referred to it as grandstanding, a lot of people trying to make take an issue and make a name for themselves out of it. And whenever we allow them to do this, we either, you know, allow people to suffer from it, or we allow legislation to be put in place that is going to have these unintended consequences, that is going to have ramifications that we don't want and don't expect.
We have a caller on line one. Welcome to Common Sense.
Hi, thanks.
How are
you? I have a big issue with charging teens with sex crimes for sending pictures to their boyfriends or their girlfriends over the internet. And I'd like for you maybe to let us know what we could do to fight these laws from being passed.
Well, actually, what you can do is very simple. As with almost anything, everything comes down to politics. You can actually lobby your state legislature to pass laws that would prevent this type of thing. They would specifically state that this type of activity is excluded. Now, if they feel the need to, and we're gonna, like I said, we're gonna have a segment on this coming up probably in about two or 3 weeks. I'm not sure yet. Depends on scheduling, where we're going to be able to get into detail about this. But basically, as with any recommend, anything that would that we would want to get from our state legislature, I would say you lobby them. If they feel the need to protect children, they could specifically state that this is specifically excluded from a offense as a child, as a adult. This is if it's committed by a child under the age of 18, it is excludable. They can be deemed juvenile delinquents, and the record expunged and has no effect whatsoever on their permanent record and does not carry with them, with precautions in place to prevent that from carrying over. Because in this day and age, it's very difficult. I mean, I was not an angel my whole life. I'm sure that'll come as a shock to you guys. And when I was 14, 15 years old, I got myself in trouble, and it took me the better part of 10 years to get that off my record. And it was a minor thing that occurred when I was a child. So it was a fight. That was back then. Now the laws are even looser to allow this stuff to go on. And what it really is we have to make decisions as a society. Are we going to parent our own kids? Here's an idea, parents. You don't want your daughter taking pictures of herself naked and sending them to her boyfriend. Don't buy your daughter a telephone with a camera on it. Does she need one? No. Then there you go. Problem solved. You know, don't buy your daughter the texting software. Block texting from your phone. Let the parents parent their children. Whenever government steps in and says, I can do a better job than you, and they'll always take that anecdotal one person and throw them out there. They're infamous for this nonsense.
They will always do that.
And they say, look, oh, my God, this is horrible.
We have to stop it.
Well, you know, first of all, as someone who can remember what it was like to be 15 years old, if my girlfriend would have sent me a picture of her naked, I don't want to do myself. But, you know, this day and age, everyone's going to be shocked and awe. Oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. This is going to destroy their life. Really? Is it? Hollywood celebrities, you know, some people, there's a running theory that all this started with Vanessa Hudgens because she took pictures of herself and then sent them off to Zac Efron, who, being the great boy that he is, apparently, allegedly sent them on the internet. Yeah. I mean, there is a lesson to be learned here to all of our teenage fans. You don't take pictures of yourself naked and send them to your teenage boyfriend for the exact same reason you don't have his name tattooed on your rear end. Because what is today will not be tomorrow, and then there's problems.
Well, this goes into the much larger.
But that's
issue
for parents
of you know of privacy and that when things are recorded digitally, how quickly and easily they get onto the internet and become uncontrollable. But you know, getting back to the caller's question of what can be done, well, I think where you have to start is you have to voice your opinion, and by that I mean writing a letter to your representative and saying, feel this is ridiculous, contacting these people. Let them, you know, make sure that they know that you feel that it's ridiculous. We're seeing a lot of both sides of this, of minors given the rights of adults, which they shouldn't have, and minors being prosecuted and held to adult standards, which they should not be.
Well, there's lots of contradictions in the law. We could do a whole show just on that alone.
Oh, gosh.
But this is something that I think that we do need to be careful of, because not only are they charging the child who took the picture of themselves, which is the key here, they're charging everyone who received those pictures, and if they're sitting on their cell phone, they are then in possession of quote-unquote child pornography. You know, even the laws, the sexual assault statutes in most states have a clarification when it comes to the age of consent, that if the person is within 2 or 3 years, regardless of their actual age, they do not fall under the sexual predator laws. They cannot be charged with statutory rape, for example. So why would they then be able to be charged with having a picture of the girl? It just, the whole thing defies completely defies logic. I mean, I get where they're coming from. I get the idea of what the law was made for, but this is once again where the law is now surpassing technology. And whenever prosecutors put on their creativity hats,
you have to question the motivation behind this type of prosecution.
The motivation for A, doing it, and B, calling the press and letting everyone know they did it.
Right. I mean, you can find a lot of things that are technically against the law, but this is the craziest stretch.
It's
kids goofing around in this manner, which you know is going to happen naturally.
When you put kids with, with cameras in private areas, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, you know, show me yours, I'll show you mine. That wasn't an offer here, Mike. I'm just saying that this is teenagers are being stupid. And you know, I'll never forget something that you told me a long time ago from your teaching days that just for some reason cracked me up, and you never saw the real humor in it. You said that you see a bunch of kids in high school, they're walking into an abandoned classroom. What else are they going to do but something stupid?
Yes.
And that just cracked me up, but because it's so true. I think that once again, this is where parenting comes in, and we need to allow parents to parent their children.
Exactly. This is the type of shenanigans that should be turned over to parents to handle and should not even involve anybody in law enforcement.
Yeah.
This is the extreme example of a victimless crime.
Well, I don't know that it's not victimless. I think that what could happen afterwards could theoretically create victims if those pictures get out on the general net and start making the kiddie porn circuit. I think there's...
victimizing themselves, perhaps.
But they're exploiting themselves, and they're clearly not aware of the
implications
of what they can do. But then
kids, not aware of the implications.
But then how the heck can
Stop
they be...
the press.
Well, exactly. But then how can they be held responsible in a criminal manner? If you are saying the reason you have this law is because they don't understand the implications. I mean,
I don't know. I think that we're basically preaching to the choir. I don't think you're going to find too many people other than those with self-interest of aggrandizing this that are going to say that this is necessary. But we do need to voice our disgust for this type of thing when it goes on, and we have to let those who are our representatives know directly, most importantly by writing them and telling them, hey, you should not be allowing this to go on.
Yeah, and this is a this is one of those things that you can send to your state legislature as opposed to your federal legislator, because I don't believe there might be some internet trafficking laws. I don't think any U.S. attorney has been dopey enough to try and pull this nonsense on teenagers yet.
At what level has this been going on? And can a person contact their their DA, their local officials?
DA is usually the place we go to go is would be the state senate. You would call the state senate. You would call your assemblyman. This is above the city, below the feds. So it's going to be all the state issue. You would do the same thing that we talk about all the time, which is send letters and call. You always do both, let your opinion known. This is one of the things where if your state is not yet prosecuting people on it under this, you could do something to prevent it so that we don't start destroying more kids' lives, because this is what's happening here. You're destroying kids' lives. Then what happens next? Then they become the very problem that we don't want to have. So I think that we've got to really be vigilant in trying to protect our children, not just from themselves, but from overzealous prosecutors as well. Because to me, it's just utterly ridiculous that
Is it more that the law hasn't caught up to technology as far as kids and, you know, internet pictures? Because do they have an alternative that, you know, does law enforcement or, and I don't know that you know this.
Yeah, they have an alternative. Whatever happened to you grab the kid by the scruff of her neck, you bring her home to her father and kick her in the ass? Whatever happened to that?
But what happens if you are the parent of the child who, with the naked, you know, whose naked picture was being passed around? There was a girl, I believe, who committed suicide over this. And so, what if you're that parent and your daughter's pictures? Okay, yeah, she thinks she's sexy, she's hot, she's Miss Britney Spears, yada yada, whatever. And she goes and texts her boyfriend a picture that she ought not to have, you know, done that. And then, you know, Mr. Oh boy, I'm going to be popular now, look what I have. He goes and he texts his friends, and the next thing you know, and the high school knows, your daughter is absolutely embarrassed beyond belief. And now one could assume you're pissed. So you go
one
to
would argue,
the police,
one
and
would
you
argue
go
that,
to...
Okay, but here's your answer. One would argue that the boy, who the picture is not of him, it's of someone else, who then takes that picture, for whatever reason, and disseminates it to others, has now crossed the line into being a juvenile delinquent, and should be treated as a juvenile delinquent, possibly taken into custody, but dealt with in the juvenile system.
And
the girl just learned a very valuable lesson. Stop being stupid.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. Like, is it overzealous prosecutors or,
of
you know,
course
cops,
it is.
Whatever.
Whenever a prosecutor has
or
to sit there.
Or do they have an alternative? Because, you know, do they have an
alternative? First of all, if you have an alternative. You just taught your daughter a very valuable lesson. Personal responsibility. You did something stupid. Something very painful happened out of it. You just learned a very valuable lesson. The other kid learned a lesson that is, if he gets brought into the juvenile into the JD system, then he learned a lesson. Possibly she could be brought in the JD system. My issue here is that this is not is that we are destroying children's lives for the rest of their life.
I understand that, and that's why I'm asking: is there something that is more appropriate to? You know,
well, I would argue more appropriate is bringing her home by the scruff of her neck and taking her phone away. That's what I would argue is more appropriate. Sitting them all down, and it's just one of those embarrassing moments. Look, you know, when I was, I was 12, 13 years old, I was going on my way to school. Hey, we're going to start talking about embarrassing stuff now. I was on my way to school, and the girl that lived next door to me pulled my pants down. Well, I wasn't all that pleased about that. So about a week later, I pulled her pants down in front of God and the world. Let me tell you something. I got my butt kicked pretty bad for that when they told my parents about it. But I didn't go to jail for sexual assault. If you took the law...
But the picture was it being disseminated to every Tom, Dick, and Harry in high school.
You're missing the point. If you followed the letter of the law, both she and I could have been prosecuted for sexual assault. They have it now in high schools. They're throwing high school boys in jail for slapping a girl on the rear end. Now, granted, it's dumb. You shouldn't be doing it. I get that. But to go to the point of saying that's sexual assault and now he's a sexual predator, we've got to throw some rational thought, some common sense into our prosecutions. That's all I'm saying. We are going to shift some pretty hard gears right now. As we are going to talk about cash for clunkers going through the House, we're going to get back to regular Washington politics. Enough of this local nonsense. On the flip side of the break, and we will see you guys in 2 minutes.
Have you added up all the hidden costs behind Walmart's prices?
The estimated $1.8 billion taxpayers shell out for health care because Walmart doesn't cover their employees. The lost wages of 1.6 million women who had to take Walmart to court to get paid the same as men. The countless manufacturing jobs lost while America's largest corporation became America's biggest importer of Chinese goods. Behind Walmart's profits, the middle class pays the price. America can't afford it any longer.
Welcome to my tweet. Don't get your hopes up. It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. And now, it's time for a few torture tweets. JC Christian from Jesus General blog says, Cheney and company not stupid. New torture lousy for interrogation, but good for false confessions. It's what they wanted. Excuses for Iraq. MSNBC's Chris Hayes tweets, if torture was so effective, why couldn't we get Osama's location? Wouldn't that be a top thing you'd torture to get? The Tom Hartman show says, old-fashioned conservative constitutional lawyer Bruce Fine agrees with Tom that Bush, Cheney, et al. Needs to be prosecuted to protect liberty. Hunter DK from Daily Kos. Thankfully, the attitude that the U.S. is above the law won't inspire any terrorism. So there you have it. Torture equals safety. Greg Mitchell of Editor and Publisher says, as this week showed, torture photos wouldn't put our troops' lives in danger nearly as much as continuing to deploy stressed-out soldiers. Four Legs Good? She says, can someone explain what the GOP strategy is? Sure, Bush tortured people, so Pelosi should resign? And finally, at the Political Carnival, I posted about Spain's investigation of the torture at Gitmo, Bushko's answer to German concentration camps. The post is called Extreme Repression Force, Spain's Probe, Gitmo Abuse Devastating. It's worse than anyone can imagine, and per a report by Jeremy Scahill, it's still going on. My post got a lot of attention on Twitter. Here's what MSNBC's Carlos Watson replied. I think will be serious U.S. investigations, just taking some time. Tip point will come when Democratic incumbents get primary challengers. I told him, we can't wait that long. If you read the post, you'll see why. And just because I don't want you to be tortured by any more tweets, I'll throw it back to you, Jim.
Well, thank you very much. 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. Is our number. We are going to be with you for the next hour and a couple of minutes coming up in the next hour. First up is going to be Cash for Clunkers, bill going through to Congress right now. We're going to talk about how guns hijacked the credit card bill through the use of guns. And we're going to be talking about the GOP's push to make 2010, try not to laugh all at once, folks, the year of the Bible. I am completely... totally not kidding. I should have said that a different way. I should have said they're gonna make it the year of the Bible. It's what I should have done. That's the way I should have done.
Throw a little echo.
That's
in there.
Awesome.
Little echo in there.
Awesome.
The 888-228-4494 is our number. You guys on Twitter, I'm gonna turn this computer off. I'm going to stop reading what you're saying. You need to pick up the phone and start calling in here. You're all too shy. 888-228-4494. It's amazing. The Twitter feed just rolls and rolls and rolls, and they don't call to save their life. It's every week, same thing. Why are we paying for phone lines, Mike?
Well, you'd think we'd jump them when they call. We're very friendly. Let you speak your mind. Go ahead and call
on. We won't attack you.
Well, you know, I can't promise you that. You know, they say something to us.
I can. I don't attack. I'm nice.
Yeah, let some elephant show up on the phone and see what happens. Mike, you want to talk about
Cash
for Clunkers? Cash
for Clunkers. So you're asking, what is Cash for Clunkers?
This I got a clunker. I got some cash?
Pretty much. We're talking about automobiles here. And it's one of those things that sounds really, really good. There's competing bills at the moment. They're gaining steam. The thought is that it's going to happen in one form or another. We're having a little trouble following what form that's going to be because, as you know, before the bill actually comes out, we have a lot of wrangling, fighting over it. But the basic premise is the same, and that is you own an old car. It's a gas guzzler. It's bad for the environment. The government is talking about paying you to turn your car in on a new car, and in some cases a newer used car. So on its surface, it sounds fantastic.
So all these guys that I was saying before are idiots for having their pickup trucks. They can actually turn them in and get themselves a new car.
They may get their chance. But Of course, it's convoluted. We wouldn't let you down there. It's very convoluted. But there's a couple of major bills that are being tossed around right now. I have some notes on a couple of them I could share with you. We have H.R. 1550. This is probably the one you've heard of the most because this has the cute name. It's called the CARS Act. And that stands for Consumer Assistance to Recycle and Save Act. You might argue with some of those points.
They burned the midnight oil to come up with that spin.
Oh, this reminds me of the elementary school project. You write your name out.
Give me
a word for each letter.
I'm going to have to tell all of my listeners right now to grab a hold of something and hold on tight because it's going to be spinning here soon.
Well, here's some of the basic proposals under the CARS Act. That they will give you up to $5,000, which is a significant amount of money. We're not talking $8,000 off a house here. We're talking a quarter of the value of the new car. They're saying that the trade-in should be 8 years old or older, that the new vehicle should be assembled in North America, that the new vehicle have a minimum fuel efficiency of 27 miles per gallon. Now, H.R. 1550's had some criticism, and one of the...
It's illegal.
Oh, yes. We have a couple of issues. We have the problem
not the least
that,
which is illegal.
That's never stopped us before.
Violates
yeah,
the treaty.
Really. That's right. What I was just thinking.
It's never illegal. Yeah, it sounds nice to say let's trade in our cars and buy a North American manufactured car. Now, this doesn't mean that it has an American nameplate on it. It means that it was assembled in North America. However, treaty violation issues. The reason this bill stalled is because it's not really seen as environmental. This is called the auto industry version of the cash for clunkers idea. Whereas the car, you would be getting rid of a perfectly good car to turn it in on a car that got very few miles per gallon better. And then we have to take into consideration that a lot of pollutants go into the air in building the new car. So that takes us over to the Senate bill. And you might have heard the Senate bill being backed by Senator Dianne Feinstein.
Mm-hmm.
And this bill is originally started out as part of the economic stimulus bill. Now they are calling it something new. It was originally under the Economic Stimulus or American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And right now it's being reintroduced as the Accelerated Retirement of Inefficient Vehicles Act of 2009.
The Accelerated Retirement of Inefficient Vehicles Act.
I have trouble getting these statements out. They are really incredible. But you're looking at some of the same things.
Hey, your tax money goes to pay the staff member that came up with that.
Oh, yes. And try reading one of these things. It's a lot of work. Also, if you're reading articles on this, you run into problems. One article will say one thing, one article will say the other. But some of the basic tenets of this are up to $4,500 on your trade-in vehicle. But this can be based on the year of the vehicle. So if you have an older vehicle, they might not give you as much. If you have a newer vehicle, it may be worth more. But you have a sliding scale here. You may get as low as $2,500. You may get as high as $4,500 on the trade-in. The new fuel economy of the vehicle must be a combined, not a street or highway, but a combined fuel economy of 18 miles per gallon or less. And the vehicle, of course, must have been registered, must be drivable, must have been registered for 120 days.
So you can't tow that planter in the backyard down there.
Yeah.
Oh, you can understand that. They don't want literal junk turned in for this kind of money.
Go down to the junkyard and say, I'll take all of those.
Although it would surprise me if there's loopholes in this.
And hey, some of our listeners, you know, when they mow their backyard there, they may find one of these cars. And so,
isn't that if they're a redneck?
Well, have you seen?
I was thinking that, and then I wasn't going to say that. You guys are awful. You've
met some of my family. What are you talking about? I'm deeply in tune with my redneck roots.
It's Foxworthy here.
Hey,
I've had to climb a water tower at 3 o'clock in the morning to defend my sister's honor. I don't appreciate you making fun of it.
And we digress. This is seen as the more environmentally leaning bill, the Feinstein bill.
Environmental cars.
Yes.
There's an oxymoron.
It requires that the vehicle that you're trading in on be 25% more efficient, and it also has a per-class efficiency. So, for example, you're buying a family sedan versus a two-seater versus a truck. It would have to get a notably higher gas mileage for its class than a standard vehicle. And then this is also interesting. You could trade your old vehicle in on transit fare. Now, I don't know about you, but I think I would have a very hard time spending $3,000 to $4,500 worth of bus fare, but sounds like a good idea. You could ride the bus for life if you turn in your car. So you're not necessarily turning the car
in
a
day. Really?
Until they raise the rates on the bus fare.
That kind of depends on how that goes. But yes, that's current provision in the bill being considered, is that you could trade that vehicle in for a voucher for public transit.
Now, this is interesting. I have Natalie Walker in England sends us over a tweet. She says, similar thing has been recently enacted here. Has to be over 10 years old, and you have owned it for 1 year. And you get, I believe that's 2,000 quid. I don't know what that turns into.
Me neither, but I do know that similar programs have been tried in UK and also in Germany. There have been abuses.
Of course.
As you can imagine. There was a famous incident where a couple bought two Nissan GSXRs. I may be getting that name a little bit off there, but two Nissan sports cars were traded in their Cash for Clunkers program. So, a lot of discussion on this. It looks like this is going to go forward anyway, but do you feel this is a reasonable way to spend tax money? Should the government be paying people to trade in their car?
Yes.
Does it require people? Our tax money already came out, so we're just going to get it back.
I'll say again?
The bailout. The bailout, we're already paying for that bailout, and part of that bailout is for the automakers. And this bill is actually, to stimulate the auto industry, to buy cars and whatnot. So in a sort of way, we're kind of just getting our money back, which is in some small way a little bit easier to swallow than, say, hearing about, bailouts where other industries, such as the banking industry, that they just are paying their workers $1 million to bankrupt the company. So I think in a way, we're getting
their defense,
our money back.
I don't think they get paid to actually bankrupt the company. I think that their
they get million
stated
dollars
goals are other than that.
Stimuluses at, and or I'm sorry, not stimuluses, $1 million
bonuses, what is it? Yes.
Yeah, bonuses, thank you.
I would argue that these are good ideas for a couple of reasons. One, pollution affects all of us, not just the person who bought the stupid car. They're already saying that this is going to have the equivalent effect. And I have a hard time getting this number out. And normally I would ask for a second source on this, but I'll accept MSNBC as a good first one. 52 million cars off the road a year.
Are they talking specifically about cash for clunkers, or are they also talking about the increased CAFE standards?
Increased CAFE standards is all kind of going.
The cash for clunkers is just the you having an individual voucher to spend towards a new car purchase for turning
and
in
it's
your
only
home.
It's only supposed to be in effect for a year. So
the idea of this is to try and save the rear end of the auto industry.
Exactly.
One could argue that this is only veiled by the environmental argument that the real push behind this is
both.
You could say
it's two birds, one stone. I think this is long overdue, to be honest with you, Mike. I think that first of all, this Congress just needs to shut up about the bailouts. I don't want to hear it. These guys didn't bat an eye when it came to bailing out Wall Street, and these poor guys over at UAW have had to beg, borrow, and steal just to be able to get the light of day upon them. And how we are treating our workers in the Rust Belt is just beyond pathetic. We have those guys are not in a recession up there. They're in a depression.
And it's embarrassing.
They've been in a while.
The dichotomy between the blue collars and the white collar workers are a national embarrassment. I'm sorry, what?
It's beyond embarrassing, and I think
It is. There's no way that you can justify that you're giving more money to white-collar workers to say, we can't bear to lose you can't fail, and yet
how many of our middle class citizens depend on blue collar, you know, the blue collar industry of
majority
the auto
country is blue collar. I mean, so
exactly. And to sit there and put restrictions and demands on them and say you have to do this, that, and the other thing in order for us to even consider helping you out is appalling.
Well,
so
we have.
I don't think that this is necessarily just a blue-collar, white-collar issue. If you're talking about bailing out the automakers, an automaker has a lot of blue-collar jobs. It also has a lot of management jobs. It also has a lot of advertising
it's
jobs.
It's predominantly blue-collar.
We're talking about a whole industry.
Yeah,
you're always going to have more blue-collar workers, but this goes into a much larger argument about manufacturing and the replaceability of blue-collar labor in the manufacturing marketplace.
It's a stimulus program in essence.
I'll tell you one thing about all the stimulating. At some point, something's going to need to be stimulated and actually start pulling back. Now, there's a lot of good news on the horizon. A lot of good news has come out. This past week, last week was like, oh, not really so much good to news report. This week, things are looking a little bit better. We'll have to see if that continues. Next week, we'll go further into it.
As far as the outlook for the economy,
looks like it's getting a little bit better. It's starting to show some signs of life.
As for this particular bill, though, it's not without criticism. For example, how do you guys feel about the fact that some people are saying this is basically rewarding people who knowingly made a bad decision when they bought this car?
I don't know. Let's find out what our caller on line two has to say about this. Welcome to Common Sense.
Hi, Jim. I got some more information about the Cash for Clunkers scheme here for you.
Okay.
The way it works is they receive £2,000 if they sell their old car and buy a new model. It's not restricted to greener models, though. But the way it's working is that the car industry here is contributing half of that. So it's not just government tax money that it's coming from. It's coming from the car industry as well.
Okay, so the money itself is coming from the car industry out there. Well, see, unfortunately here, the car industry doesn't have any money to give.
They are literally bankrupt.
£2,000 a car, I'm not quite sure what the translation is in dollars.
I think pounds are worth more than dollars. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure about that.
But in any event, it's a sizable amount of money.
It's a decent amount of money.
That they are providing out there. So that's actually quite...
What do you think of this issue? Well, for example, if I look at my own family, we have a 1991 Accord and a 1991 Civic, both of them four-cylinder cars. The Accord has crazy high mileage on it. I would love for the government to help me replace that car, but they're not going to. This requires that the car gets 18 miles per gallon or worse as far as its original sticker for combined mileage. Now, I went and did a little research on this. What kind of car gets 18 miles per gallon or worse? And I can't tell you how hard it is to find them. A Crown Victoria had an original sticker of 20. Now, this is the car, if you're not familiar with it, that the police use. Very large
American
V8 car. A Dodge Caravan, the four-cylinder version. A few of the six-cylinder with the four-speed automatic transmission. They got better gas mileage than this. So this is talking about giving people this money who are driving grossly gas-guzzling vehicles. Large SUVs, pickup trucks, things like this. I have a little bit of a problem with that. As much as I understand it'd be nice to take these off the road, I think they're pretty much, the gas prices and the aging is going to take them right off the road anyways.
Well, that's an interesting point that you raised, that some of this stuff may be coming off the road anyway. But then again, I would argue this. What we see in America is that these older gas-guzzling beasts tend to go to the socio-economically disadvantaged people. The people just don't have the money. So
and they're not going to be buying a new car anyway.
Well, maybe they will. They got a $5,000 voucher for cashing in their car. I don't know. If you're looking at a hybrid, now you're talking about all of a sudden being able to get a car for a couple thousand dollars because you've got multiple incentives there. You've got your up to $5,000 rebate there. Some states give $3,000 on tax credits and then other incentives as well. So there, you could, it's an interesting argument that you say that they'd be going out anyway. I think that the CAFE standards tied in with this.
Or what about this? This is another thought that I had. What if this money were spent directly on public transit projects as opposed to subsidizing people buying vehicles?
You mean stop subsidizing the bad behavior and go for the...
You know, if you're going to give a voucher to ride the bus, what about not helping the state
way,
of the locality?
And by the way, it's $3,184.
My Twitter
fans are great.
Oh, how many for pounds to dollars are we talking?
$3,184.
Pounds per dollar?
No, not dollars per dollar. That's how much that $2,000 turns into.
As far as how much you would actually get for your trade-in, it varies wildly depending on which bill you're looking at. Again, these are all bills up for consideration. And it depends on the age and the mileage and the mileage of the vehicle you're buying. And then we don't know what vehicles this would apply to. If you're talking a Senate bill, you could buy any make of any vehicle.
Well, for the House version, the House version is for passenger cars, the old vehicle must get less than 18 miles per gallon, which, according to your cars, I think you don't qualify. But new passenger cars with mileage of at least 22 miles per gallon are eligible for vouchers. If the mileage of the car is at least 4 miles per gallon higher than the old vehicle, the voucher will be worth $3,500. If the mileage of the new car is at least 10 miles per gallon higher than your old vehicle, the voucher will be worth $4,500. So a person trading in a 2000 four-wheel drive Chevy Blazer, for example, that gets 15 miles per gallon for a Ford Fusion Hybrid, which gets 37 miles per gallon, would get the maximum benefit. And then,
but how many people own a Chevy Blazer 4x4? I'm still out of luck with my 91 Accord.
Well, that's because you went off and bought something semi-responsible in the first place. And one would argue that you've paid less fuel for it over the years, and so you already reaped a benefit.
This is true.
I mean, I think that's really the big issue here is that it's carbon emissions, number one, and number two is getting us the heck off of foreign oil. I mean, or at least at a bare minimum, Middle East oil. It'll take us a long time to get off foreign oil. A lot of our oil comes from Canada. But we've got to get off Middle East oil. We've got to stop. You know, the one thing I heard that, I forgot who it was now, I think it was Newt Gingrich, but one of the Republicans said this. We've got to stop sending money to people who are trying to kill us. You know,
I don't know that that's what we're actually doing. I think in this case, with the economy in the tank, I believe that, you know, this bill, you know, is targeting the automaker, the auto industry.
Now with this bill, I said that's what we're doing as a nation in general, we are running around with these gas guzzlers, these big cars that we don't need. I'm talking ridiculous miles per gallon. If you're driving around, listening to my show, and you are that schmuck in the big yellow Hummer, just do me a favor and turn the radio off because I don't really need you as a person listening to my show. Because you are the most irresponsible example of gluttony that exists on this planet. And I'm sorry, there is not a single excuse to own one of those things. There just isn't one. And to be extra obnoxious, they paint them big yellow.
Look at me.
Exactly. Absolutely pathetic.
They're an easy target.
Of course they're an easy target. They're yellow.
I'll jump on that. Fun, but,
they're big and yellow. They blew one up on one of these movies.
To tie this into something we were talking about earlier, you know, what about something positive coming out of Washington that we could have been, you know, back in World War II, they told people that if you ride alone, and they're talking about carpooling, if you ride alone, you ride with Hitler. Because, you know, if you're not preserving gas on the home front, if you're not, you know, doing that for national security, you are helping out the enemy. Where is the call for, you know, conserving, for being responsible, for getting us off of oil?
Barack did do that during the campaign. He was mocked for telling people to check the air in their tires. Yet
this is true.
The scientists have said that actually made a huge difference after he did that, and after all that uproar. There actually was a noticeable downturn, which is pretty amazing. But it's kind of funny because we talked about this during the campaign that anyone will tell you one of the simplest things you can do to stop burning unneeded gasoline. It just keeps your car tuned and keeps the area tires.
And if you want to bring this back into responsibility, and we're all in this together, you know, ask the average person, you know, what's the tire pressure in your tires? I guarantee you they don't know. When's the last time you had this car tuned up? You know,
how do you drive?
What is your driving habits? Do you stomp on the gas every time the light turns green? We could do an enormous amount with even the fleet of vehicles that we have to cut down on our gas.
Well, if you really wanted to go nuts, if you really wanted to go over the deep end and punch the Saudis in the gut, you would put forward these new CAFE standards, initiate this this plan with Thomas. You know what? I guess I had to stop dead in my tracks here. Thomas Hensel deserves to get smacked.
Oh, do tell.
Yes,
wait a minute.
You're getting smacked.
Hold on. Wait, I think he's one of my people.
He puts forward a I know he's kidding here, but he deserves a smack for it anyway. Hummers are great for going over speed bumps at Walmart.
Of course he's kidding.
Well,
of
there you go. Kidding. No, he's making your point, I think, for you.
They did a very nice job in the auto industry, and you know, kudos to their marketing campaign of convincing us that we should, you know, because people like to buy new things and they look for rationalizations and reasons to buy new things. You know, we all do.
Are we talking about Walmart?
We're still talking about cars.
Okay.
They convinced us all that if we have a family, because, you know, this has never happened before there were SUVs, we need a truck or a minivan or an SUV to haul the family around. And, that's absolute nonsense. I come from a rather large family. When we had a family outing, we took both the cars. That doesn't mean we have to drive, you know, 100 cubic feet of cargo space every single time one person goes to work every day. So it's not really driven by needs. It's driven by wants.
Well, what I was saying was that before I was so thrown off course by Mr. Hensel there, apparently our Twitter comedian of the night. What I was starting to say was that if we really wanted to punch the Saudis in the gut here and get us off of foreign oil, we would enact these CAFE standards, put forward this stimulus package to get people off these old cars off the road, and get ready for the phones to light up if there's anyone listening at all. Drop the speed limit back to 55 miles per hour.
Oh,
because during the first problem with the Middle East oil back when we got the Iranian crisis in the 70s, what did they do? They dropped the oil down. They dropped the speed down to 55 miles per hour.
Right.
And that was done to conserve gasoline. So imagine you're driving your vehicle, your relatively high mileage car, and now you're driving it at 55 to 60 because no one can do the posted speed limit. We all have to speed and knowingly violate the law because we're just arrogant Americans like that. And couldn't help
it. It also has to do with idling, too. And, you know,
unless you're in New Jersey where these cops sit in the middle of the medians the whole way.
Mm. What?
No, I was making fun of New Jersey.
Well, we get to the argument of...
That's what I thought.
The bulk of the people don't want to drive 55, and they want to be free to drive faster. And then
we all think we drive on the Autobahn
faster.
Of the United States.
Want to drive fast.
Unless you're driving across the country where a 10-mile-per-hour difference in speed is actually significant by the time you arrive in California, you left Washington. Mm. Unless you're doing that, your couple miles per hour is not making a difference. In fact, how many times have you seen this? The idiot weaving in and out of traffic on the freeway, you stay in one lane, you pass him. It happens quite consistently. You pass him one of two ways, either one because the traffic just flowed that way and you passed him, or two, he's sitting on the side of the road getting warm and personal with the CHP officer and you are well on your way.
Well, I think you have a great way there of addressing this deficit, because if we reduce the speed limit back down to 55, we could make a killing on traffic tickets.
Well, yeah, by me alone. I rant against it.
You guys don't live in New Jersey, okay? I don't even want to hear it. New Jersey is the most densely populated state. Actually, I have a friend who moved from Pennsylvania, and she calls it the police state just because you see a police officer every, 10, 15 miles? Because we have so many of them. Because we have so many darn drivers.
They keep their cars nice and shiny. They're very cool. They keep them right there on the Jersey Turnpike. They have all these U-turn spots. And by the way, for those of you guys listening, if you're driving down the Jersey Turnpike and you see a sign that says no U-turn, slow the heck down because there's probably a cop in there. That's where they love to sit. And they will clock your half butt on radar and go and come after you. But in all seriousness, on the turnpike, it's 55 half the time anyway. They actually change the speed limit on the turnpike by flipping a little dial and the number changes, which I've always found to put too much control in one person's
hand.
You're
kidding.
No, I'm not. It rotates depending on.
You're sounding like the Dukes of Hazzard there. Where they
I have no evidence that they do this to get people tickets. They do it when there's a traffic accident or something like that. They can change the speed limit on the turnpike. But it does seem like all these ideas, in all seriousness, can be good to get us off of foreign oil. Let's do a couple of gear shifting around here. I do want to get on to the guns in the parks and the bill for
the credit card bill.
The credit card bill. But before we get to that, we should go live to your state there, Mike, and have a conversation. Apparently, Armageddon has arrived in California.
Ooh.
Where the voters rejected the higher tax levies.
Yes, you're talking about our financial Armageddon.
Yes. And,
yes, it's a mirror of what's going on nationally, but we have it especially bad here in California. For those people who don't know, we had several propositions on the ballot that were basically put on for the purpose of revoking things that people had voted for earlier. In California, we have a problem where too much of our state budget has already been decided by ballot measures, so that the governor and the legislature, who we blame for this financial mess, really don't have the level of control that they need in order to keep the budget balanced. Excuse me. We've enacted all of these various ballot initiatives, which sounded really good at the time. I'm talking things like money for schools, money for various improvements, money for social programs. And then the state comes up short, and the legislature has no power in order to revoke these. They were voted in by the voters. On top of that, we have the rule where a 50% vote for a tax hike is not adequate. I believe it's three-quarters, or is it two-thirds?
Two-thirds.
Screwing up my fractions here. But you have to have an overwhelming majority of the legislature in order to form a tax hike, in order to pass a tax hike. So I believe now with the failure of these, we're looking at a $20 billion shortfall.
$24 billion.
Yikes.
Is what they're reporting. And that is $24 billion deficit, which is 25% of the entire general fund of the state of California.
And to bring this into the federal realm, we're now asking in California that our loans, because since about 2001, 2002, the way we've quote-unquote fixed our budget in California is we've borrowed money. And so we borrow more money every year, and they say, hey, we got the budget now. We borrowed money. We got it covered. The state's looking at not really being able to borrow much more money because it's overextended. People don't want to buy these bonds if they don't feel that it's going to have the ability to pay for them, of course. So now we're asking the federal government to back our loans. The federal government, of course, already going to huge amounts of debt. So it's a real mess. It's going to be interesting.
Well,
to
here's
see how
what they're talking about in California right now, and this is really going to be something else. They're talking about ending California state welfare altogether.
Oh.
1.5 million poor children will lose their health care. They want to halt all cash grants for college. They want to shorten the school year by 7 days. They want to lay off thousands of state workers and teachers. They want to get money out of the state parks, closing state parks.
They want to sell off state assets.
They want to release thousands of prisoners before their sentences are finished. And Schwarzenegger put forward this interesting statement the other day. He said that I hear that this is what he says every time he puts a ballot measures up to end up getting smacked down by the voters. He says, I understand. I hear the voters loud and clear, and they want us to live within our means. I think what Arnold should have said was, I hear the voters loud and clear. They want everything and they don't want to pay for it.
Mm.
And I quit.
And I quit.
He should have just said, you know what? To heck with you guys. What's gotten California into trouble is these ballot measures that are unfunded, Everybody wants everything, and they don't want to pay for it.
Unfunded mandates.
Now, what I will say this is, notice what will not be, is not being threatened to be cut so far.
And what's that?
Police and firefighters. Now, you guys, I don't know about your various states, but in California, I know in Washington, every state I've gone to, whenever they've got a budget crisis, the first thing they tell you is it's going to affect police and firefighters. And my question is, when are the police and firefighters unions going to stand up and say, we're tired of being your patsy?
Oh, they are, totally. I mean, one would, when one looks at the amount of money that the state spends, I know police and fire are not cheap, but it can't possibly cost this much. They are used every single time that the state says they need more money or they need to increase fees or they need to increase taxes. But we are running up against a heck of a stalemate here. On the one hand, you know, the list, for example, that you just read, every time you mention another one of these things, we all kind of, oh, they're going to cut that. And on the flip side, what's the solution? Raise the state sales tax? So that's not going to happen. You're not going to get two-thirds of the
legislature to raise the state sales tax.
So it's one or the other, people. You're going to cut
but
the services.
Why do you guys have such a problem with your budget when you have Hollywood there? I don't understand that. Like, the movie industry makes gazillions of dollars. I mean, every movie that the blockbuster, it's like, oh, it reached $100 million.
I can tell you
partially
why. I mean, we do have an incredible tax base here in the state of California. We bring in a lot of money. And one thing I ask myself is, you know, with not only Hollywood, but with the increase of property value out here, I mean, we're reading in the news how it's fallen, but it's still very high historically. How are they blowing all of this cash?
Exactly.
Part of the reason why it's very hard to raise taxes is, and we've already seen this in California, when we raise taxes, we chase out businesses to other states. When we chase out businesses to other states, Hollywood in particular, a lot of quote-unquote Hollywood has moved to Canada, has moved to Georgia, has gone to New Mexico for tax breaks, and we lose that base.
Well, because
that
2 or 3% is big money when you're spending $100 million.
Say again?
I said that 2 or 3% is big money when you're spending $100 million.
Oh, yes.
You know, so you also have personal income in California has declined for the first time since 1938. Unemployment sitting at 11%. However, very interesting thing here, when Schwarzenegger took over after pushing Gray Davis. Gray Davis? Yeah, Gray Davis.
Gray Davis, right out the door.
After he got elected, they went and they recalled him and threw him out the door. And when Arnold Schwarzenegger inherited a $16 billion budget gap. Now $24 billion. Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to come in there and fix everything, stop all the crazy deficit spending. And turns out they spent more. But a lot of it is because the voters keep voting for. I mean, there's a large percentage of California's budget is mandated by ballot measures.
Definitely.
And we're going to have, this is what happens when you start talking about one voter or one vote democracy, because people want everything, they don't want to pay for it. And I come back to this all the time, that we are to blame for a lot of what goes on. And we just say, hey, we want this, we want that. What's interesting is that the California state legislature was forced to take a nearly 20% pay cut. Yay.
They had to take a – there was one proposition that passed in all of these propositions. I may get the number of it wrong. I believe it was 1F. But the one proposition that passed was this proposition that limited their pay in times of deficit. And
which
I guess
apparently
part
is
of
every
it,
day in your state.
Oh, it's every day since 2001. They would not be able – and it is kind of gross. It's the same type of outrage that you saw with AIG, for example, when they're being bailed out by the government and they're giving people bonuses. We have, you know, people at all levels of government in the state of California that have been giving themselves raises. Meanwhile, the state seems to be falling further in debt.
It's getting more and
so
more
where
ridiculous.
Does the bottom stop?
Well, I think the bottom stops when the economy starts to turn around. I think that's when California is going to start to turn around as well. When we start seeing this on a national level, we'll see it. California is the fifth largest economy in the world. The state budget is the fifth largest in the world. So we're going to start to see they will be one of the first ones to come back.
I agree with you too that as much as it's going to have ramifications, I think higher taxes are inevitable in this state.
I don't see how you're going to avoid it.
If you look at New York, they have a lot higher tax rate than we do, and it's a similar situation where you have large metropolis, you have a lot of services that need to be paid for, and it unfortunately, it just takes relatively higher rates. We could not afford to have Nevada's or Oregon's tax structure in California. We have too much to support.
Right, and that's why I was wondering, how did that happen? Because I do remember the whole Gray Davis debate and how you guys just about booted him out of the country, let alone the state. But it's sad that you apparently do have the revenue and the base there, and it's just...
Well, you know, I kind of liken it to this. You know, people look at a company and they go, wow, that company makes so much money. You know, what are you doing with all this money? And then, you know, as we're finding now that the economy has hit a downturn, a lot of these companies are going out of business. So it's not only the revenue, it's the expenses that you're paying out. You know, California has tremendous revenue base, but it also has large cities, large infrastructure, you know, tremendous amount of things to support. It has more money going out than it has coming in.
We have some breaking news. Former South Korean President Roh Moo-hyun, I hope I pronounced that right, has apparently died after falling while hiking. This is just coming in right now. It's not confirmed yet, but this is just coming in that the President of South Korea has passed away after a hiking accident, of all things to die of. You just
reminds me of the skiing accident.
That's interesting breaking news right there. And once again, we're just the show of segues today. We're going to grind the gears yet again.
You know,
we're not for our smooth segues.
What path was he on? Because we need to send the North Korean leader on to a hiking trip so that we don't have to deal with a nuclear arms race in that area anymore.
Guns and parts. We're going to talk about guns and parts. This is a interesting thing that occurred this week. The Republican Party put a amendment onto the credit card salvation bill to allow gun owners to carry their firearms in state parks, and this has got.
If
some
it
people
was
in uproar.
Consistent with the state law in which the park was located. So it's basically extending the law of the state onto the parks, from what I understand.
Yes.
In national parks, isn't it? It's national parks.
National parks, which
right.
is interesting. The feds are conceding state legislative authority over the federal park.
Interestingly enough, this was attached to the consumer credit card bill, which was supposed to... Well, we're not supposed to.
Well, see, you buy guns with consumer credit cards, right?
Of course.
So, of course these two things make perfect sense.
It fits. It's just like one of our segues. It's perfectly related.
Yeah.
So the credit card bill was put forth to address problems in the credit card industry. For example, you know, increasing fees without notice, proactively increasing fees. This is kind of shocking to me because I always figured the credit card companies were already making money hand over fist. When I buy something with my credit card, they take a cut of the purchase just for the convenience of using the credit card. If I don't pay for it at the end of the month, they charge interest on that as well. And apparently that's not enough money for them. They also need to be able to jack fees up incredibly high and retroactively in some cases, which seems incredibly unfair. Now that credit is tightening, apparently the credit card companies are taking this out on some of their best customers by increasing fees even without any type of delinquency. So the need for the credit card bill was there. We can talk about some of the possible things that are going to come out of that. But a little rider was attached to allow people to carry guns in state parks, which is almost comical.
This is one of the idiosyncrasies of Congress, that the reason we get all this garbage legislation is because there really isn't such a thing as a clean bill. What I find very interesting is it was the Republican Party who was screaming about, we want clean bill! We want a clean bill! We don't want all these extra miscellaneous things that have nothing to do with anything on our bill! How dare you!
Oh, wait. Who was the senator that attached the...
do you know the legislation, the firearm legislation to the credit card bill?
Senator Harold, Harold Hypocrisy. Is
Harold Harry, you're not talking Harry about Harry Reid, are you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Harry
Well, you said Harold. I thought you were being...
No. You think it was a Democratic senator who...
I thought you were just being kind of smart.
Being facetious, perhaps?
Yeah, well, I was.
Yeah, smart as in smart-ass.
Yes. I don't know. You've mistaken me for someone who comes to my show prepared.
Richard
Shelby?
It just
says here I'm talking about guns and parks. It doesn't say why.
I just throwing that out there in case anybody knew offhand. But
thanks.
It
doesn't matter. It's
back
a GOP
point.
Dude in the pocket of the NRA, and the bill, of course, was signed into law by President Obama because
right.
he wanted the credit
he
card.
He wanted
provisions,
the credit card,
so he was not going to go in there. And I don't know. Is this really that big of a deal? I mean, I see my...
Oh, I got it. I'm sorry, guys. Senator Tom Coburn. Excuse me. Republican.
Tom Coburn would have done just fine.
Yeah.
Tom Coburn, what other information do you have on him? From which state?
This is the 20th, May 20th.
The question was, what state is he from?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said date. The state is Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
That's why I thought it was Oklahoma.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Do you feel this is a big deal? Is it a big issue? I don't think that the guns in the park is really a big issue, but I think that the coattail, I was looking for the term, the writing of taking a bill that is aimed at credit card legislation and stapling on a writer like this, it is a problem, because if you look at what the president said about this, he didn't support this legislation that was added, but he doesn't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. He
maybe
wants
he should have done a signing statement and then just ignored the other half.
I don't know that he can do that or what he can do, but he didn't want to throw out the credit card legislation, so he signed the whole bill. And we've brought this up before. How many things have come to fruition in this kind of underhanded manner where – we're going to hold your credit card bill hostage unless you give us this new amendment.
Yeah, it is.
It's about time. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, I don't know that we're ever going to be able to get clean bills, because if you got clean bills, nothing would ever get through Congress. I mean, how else is a senator or congressman from the Napa Valley going to get grape subsidies?
I chuckled at that, but you're right. And in some cases, I think we should mention that
the Congress,
these types of things are added to get a member of Congress to support a larger issue. Like he's kind of on the fence, or he doesn't really support it. Well, if we give you something, I guess it's similar to the pork barrel argument. If we give you something for this, if we basically bribe you, for lack of a better term, will you come along with our larger bill? Is this harmful? Is this a good way to get legislation on?
This is the one thing that I actually agree with and believe in for John McCain. He doesn't do that whole, by the way, bill passing.
John McCain's full of beans. He let me tell you something. No one has a
problem
with
one thing I like about it. That's all.
They're working their barrel.
Well, McCain was... find some legislation that was aimed at cleaning things up. McCain, help me out here. McCain-Feingold
bill. Yeah, the one that had created 527s.
But I like him for the one thing. I mean, you guys know I'm obviously very left leaning. So if I say one thing that's positive, what?
You're pretty much communist. Go ahead.
Nice. Gosh. Now, if there's one thing I can say that's nice about the Republicans, or a Republican, is that John McCain stands up, is a stand-up man, I should say, for not accepting earmarks. There, I'm done. I've said my
point. But he does accept earmarks. That's the point I was getting at. The claim is bogus. He has earmarks. He just redefines earmarks the way that Dick Cheney redefines worker.
It's nice.
There's no such thing as... I'm sorry. You're... sent to the Senate for the purpose of being able to represent your constituency. If you want a highway going through your city, your state, your senator is going to fight for that. The feds turn around and fund that highway. That's an earmark. Just because we really needed the highway. Well, someone else really needed the pig farm. I mean, you know, that it's an earmark. This whole manufactured nonsense of
my
earmarks.
Subsidies or earmarks are the research on the pig smell, which it's somewhere in the Southwest, but I forget which state, and the tattoo removal. I love that.
As I said so many times in politics, what sometimes seems like the most unbelievable, you know, ridiculous thing, you really have to stop and look at it and say, wait a minute, was it really that ridiculous, or is there something else going on? You're getting the spin. You're getting the shortened, condensed version that made it sound like, oh, my God, it's atrocious.
Well, that's true
as well. The tattoo removal, by the way, was for gang members.
Yeah, to help them adjust back into society.
Exactly.
It was in Hawaii. Maybe they have a gang problem or whatever, but it can't be any...
He doesn't mean
worse
that.
Than L.A. or Philadelphia or Miami or Detroit.
Oh, but the senator from Hawaii fought for it. The one from L.A. didn't. So he got the money for the tattoo removal. One would argue that you probably need less money to remove the tattoos of gang members in Hawaii than you would in Los Angeles.
Well, we can look at this in a couple of ways. I agree with Jim that on the face, a lot of these things that sound ridiculous actually aren't ridiculous at all. Recently, they were criticizing subsidies for studying grasshoppers. And somebody came out and said, this is ridiculous. Why are we studying grasshoppers? Why are we spending tax money for this? Well, for God's sakes, grasshoppers wipe out farms. We sell billions of dollars worth of agricultural products per year. This is money well spent. So it can be made to sound like it's ridiculous. On the other hand, it can be abused as well.
Isn't it a separate thing? Is I guess the point. Why isn't it just, hey, this is my bill for grasshoppers? Why do you have to go and pin it on, you know, for the purposes of relativity, why do we have a credit card bill with, oh, by the way, congratulations, you can carry your gun in national parks? Why not just have a separate bill for carrying guns in national parks?
Because it'll never pass. That's why they do it this way. And
right,
speaking of
then
bat nuts
that, that's
crazy
my point.
Things. Hold on.
You know what? Go ahead.
We're going to be going to my special comment here shortly, and before we do, it's on the other side of the break. I want to get to the bat nuts crazy subject of these dingbats want to make 2010 the year of the Bible. Anybody want to talk about that? 888-228-4494. I've got a few more minutes here before we head out to break.
Okay, well,
we're going to be having a special comment here shortly. My first special comment in paying homage to Keith Overman, of course, in that we'll be talking about One Dangerous Dick. So that's going to be fun. Stay tuned for that. That's coming up here in about 7 minutes or so. This 2000, you want to say something about this 2010 year of the Bible?
I just wanted to say my last point for the thing, the Senate credit card.
Oh, you missed the shift.
No, I didn't. I just wanted, my last thing is if they did have individual bills, then maybe the GOP and the Democrats would play nicer together. Perhaps they wouldn't always be at
They'd never get a single thing through Congress.
Well, here's to hoping.
things like making 2010 the year the Bible would never get through. That's the good thing that would come out of this.
Yeah, this discussion is almost purely for the sake of discussion, because I don't think this really has a chance in hell, does it?
No pun intended, I'm sure you're saying.
Oh, of course, no pun intended.
And this comes on the heels of Liberty University kicking the Democratic Party off their campus. So it's interesting that the right wing seems to feel like the answer for them to get back to power is to go further to the right and shove their religion down our throats some more. and claim the self-righteous moral high ground yet again.
Too far with that. I don't.
I want to go all the way with
this. I know you do.
It's
and
so much
I don't
fun.
Think this bill has wide
over to the left.
Party support. This bill was brought up by an individual, and he's not even getting party support or wide support for this bill. He's doing this. He's grandstanding. He's, you know, preaching to his base.
Don't they
but
always?
I don't think that this is really going anywhere. I wouldn't make a big issue of it.
Oh, but it's fun to talk about just that they're even trying it.
Yeah, you have a point there. Why is somebody trying to put their religion front and foremost and basically try to get us all to recognize their religion and using government to do that? And I'm right there with you guys saying that that is inappropriate.
Well, Chris, you got anything to say on this?
Not really. Sorry, come back in.
Not really. She's
no comment on the year of the Bible?
She's done on the year of the Bible.
Communist heathen.
No, I just think that, you know, as a Christian, I believe in the Bible, and I believe, you know, that it's Jesus' word and whatnot. But I do believe wholeheartedly that for government purposes, there should be a serious separation between government and religion. And that's, you know, for people who are Christians and are religious, that's a very difficult line to walk because
are you in conflict over this is what you're saying? Does it make it a difficult issue for yourself as a Christian?
It makes it a little difficult to discuss as it pertains to politics. I believe wholeheartedly, as I said, you know, in Jesus and I'm a Christian. That's my everyday life, but, you know, for politics, I just don't feel that it has a place, you know, being, and I also feel that, you know, as a liberal, that the Republicans kind of use it against, you know, they use religion as a tool to manipulate people, and that gets me very angry, and then, you know, I have a hard time with it. So
I would say it goes beyond Republicans that use religion as a tool. I think the religious leaders themselves,
Democrats they hide
as well.
They hide behind the Bible. You see, I mean, just last week we were talking about Pat Robertson, and, you know, he's obviously a religious person who's very popular on TV, and he was going out and saying that, you know, if we have gay rights, then all of a sudden people are going to be having sex with turtles and dolphins and stuff like that. And that, to me,
the religious right does go completely nuts. We've got a hard break coming up here. So we will have to pick this conversation up at a future time. 888-228-4494. Coming up after the break is my special comment on Dangerous Dick.
Welcome to my tweet. Don't get your hopes up. It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. This episode of my tweet spot. The dreaded random tweets. Cagro X said, if you're reporting on torture as a Pelosi story and not as a Cheney story, you're effing crazy. Misha said, the liberal side has been asking for hearings. If Pelosi is found guilty of any wrongdoing, so be it. Dan Gilmore said, lying adulterer Edwards is Dem pariah, yet lying adulterer Newt Gingrich is Republican Party hero. Victor tweeted, if a poor woman chooses abortion, she's labeled a baby killer. If she gives birth, she's labeled a welfare mother. Why? Meghan McCain waiting to go on the Colbert Report. My effing heart is racing so fast, waiting in the green room. Then later, most intense thing I have done in a long time. Colbert was so incredibly nice and fun. During Michael Steele's speech to the GOP, Shock said,
Isn't it funny how Republicans have only learned that trillions was a lot of money since November? Can you say tepid applause? Who the hell is on the applause light button? Joe the plumber? And responding to Steele's line, "This change, my friends, is being delivered in a tea bag, and that's a wonderful thing." Alexander Reiking replies, "Shorter Michael Steele. Will teabag for change." This was tweeted a couple of days ago by Joe Scarborough. "NBC does not pay me for giving 3 hours of opinion. ABC Radio does. I interview newsmakers on one show, give opinion on another." So I guess he interviews all those newsmakers on ABC Radio. And here's one more from Joe. "The president proves me right again. Military tribunals will be restarted. Twitter leftists can apologize to me now. I forgive you." Yeah, but who's going to forgive you, Joe, for being, well, Joe? Tune in next time when my tweet spot will be brought to you by Big Pharma, a.k.a. Boss Limbaugh's medicine cabinet. How do you sleep while the rest of us cry?
One of the founding principles of our republic revolves around public service. It is a theory of participatory democracy. The idea that our leaders march forward from amongst the people, place their names for nomination, are subsequently elected, and upon completion of their term in office, are returned to the people to be led by another. So it has been for as long as we can remember that regardless of political party or hard-fought campaign, the victor of an election, especially a presidential election, was supported by, if nothing else, the silence of the outgoing executive. All that ended recently, thanks to one dangerous dick who insists on undermining the President of the United States, and thus endangers the American people. Former Vice President Dick Cheney has been screaming from the rooftops that it is he, and he alone, who knows how to keep this country safe. As with many things that are Dick, the arrogant irony screams so loudly as to be impossible to ignore. It was, after all, his administration that ignored warnings of the impending attacks on our country. It was August 6, 2001, when the Bush administration received the briefing entitled, quote, "Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S." Several things came out of that briefing, including the exoneration of former President Bill Clinton, who, after Bin Laden attacked the embassies in Tanzania and Kenya, launched an attack on Al-Qaeda's training camps in Afghanistan. At the time, the Republicans chose to play politics with our nation's security and shrieked that Clinton was merely attempting to distract the country from the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Wag the dog, they said. Since then, the right wing has consistently compromised Democrats' attempts to secure and defend this nation by politically undermining then-President Clinton, pushing the false idea that Clinton bombed only an aspirin factory. The political takeaway is that Democrats can't defend this country, and when they try, they fail. But this briefing, prepared by the Bush intelligence agencies, reads, quote, "After U.S. missile strikes on his base in Afghanistan in 1998, Bin Laden told followers he wanted to retaliate in Washington," unquote. In other words, the Clinton administration did do something, and when the Republicans didn't support him, there were no accusations of treason, there were no demands for patriotic loyalty, just the overall disappointment of a nation as Republicans played politics as usual. The warnings in that briefing continued to say that Bin Laden wanted to hijack a U.S. aircraft, and if that was not enough, the smoking gun phrase, quote, "FBI information since that time indicates patterns of suspicious activity in this country consistent with preparations for hijackings or other types of attacks, including recent surveillance of federal buildings in New York," unquote. Bush and Dick did nothing. And thus, on a sunny Tuesday morning, 3,000 of our citizens pay with their lives as the Bush administration presided over the worst attack on American soil in our history. Yet today, Dick has the audacity to stand up and say he knows how to keep us safe? That ship sailed, sir. You had your chance to keep our country safe, a task at which, I remind you, you failed spectacularly. It was you, Dick, that spent what little credibility you had trying to convince all of us that Saddam Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction. It was you, Dick, who sat on Meet the Press with the late Tim Russert and told the jittery nation still reeling from those devastating attacks of 9/11 that Iraq was somehow involved. Yes, you parsed your words so that later on the Bush administration could stand by incredulously and ask, where on earth did they get that idea from? We got it from you, Dick. You told us that. You led us down a road that asked a question with only one destination as the answer. It is one of the oldest political tricks around, and you played it on the American people, a people who were hurt, angry, and desperately looking to you and your boss for leadership and guidance. You guided us, all right, straight to the gates of hell, as you arrogantly told the rest of the world they were wrong and you were right. Sacrificing our allies on the way to a war we need not be in. A war that has cost this country more in blood than was spent that horrible Tuesday morning. How dare you, Dick? How dare you think we could ever trust you to defend this country when you used your office to knowingly out a clandestine CIA agent as a means of political retribution, all because her husband had the audacity to tell the truth, that Saddam Hussein had no nuclear weapons, that there would be no mushroom cloud. The revealing of this covert agent's identity bears yet another irony. According to intelligence officials, she was part of an operation tracking distribution and acquisition of weapons of mass destruction technology to and from Iran. Once again, Dick, you've put this country in harm's way by choosing politics over this nation's security. When it became clear that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction, let alone nuclear weapons, did you hang your head in shame? Of course not. Either through sheer stupidity, blind arrogance, or both, you continued to smugly proclaim you were right, that the rest of the world believed the same information you did, and somehow this exonerated you. Once again, you lied to us. Many nations had issues with our so-called intelligence, but you dismissed them in your hunger for war. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists, your boss touted. You allowed the demonization of Russia, Germany, and France. France was fighting at our side in Afghanistan. France was the one to enact Article 5 of the NATO Treaty that an attack on one is an attack on us all. Yet like kids on a playground, you and your ilk promoted freedom fries, ordered the UN inspectors who were trying to tell you there was nothing in Iraq out, and sent our sons and daughters in. You and your boss have done more to undermine this nation's principles, reputation, and security than any coward in the sand ever could. Freedom at any cost is not freedom. Government monitoring of its citizens through electronic surveillance without just cause, let alone a warrant? Indefinite detentions without charge? And now torture? Where does it stop? Aren't these the very descriptors of governments we demonize as a matter of routine? You claim that waterboarding of detainees worked, and we should take your word for it. I don't believe your word will be taken in the People's Court as a witness in a dog-biting lawsuit, let alone trust your word on national security issues. I understand what you're doing, Dick. I wasn't so sure a few months ago, but the more I hear you speak, the more convinced I am that were there to be an investigation, you would have the honor of being the first vice president ever tried for crimes committed while in office. You claim no crimes were committed. Then what are you so afraid of? Surely if you believe that, you would feel comfortable in your exoneration. No, it is painfully obvious you are desperately trying to save your own ass. What you and your cohorts are up to is yet more political grandstanding and a frantic attempt to ensure the political environment is not conducive to conducting investigations. All of the theater of the past weeks, first denying that torture took place, then claiming it worked, then claiming that Nancy Pelosi knew about it. It is all designed to make the notoriously gun-shy Democrats think twice before they compel an investigation. And I'm here to tell each and every one of them right here and right now that if you do not investigate, if you allow this to be swept under the rug, you, the Democrats, do not deserve the office in which you hold. It doesn't matter if torture worked. A crime is a crime regardless of why it was committed. It doesn't matter if Pelosi knew, or if every Democrat knew. It was classified, it couldn't be disclosed publicly, and the Democrats had no power at the time anyway. But you have the power to at least begin to remove this horrible stain on our history now. And I submit that Dick is forcing your hand. It is time for accountability to return to Washington. That, my friends, is why you were elected. That is why you are there. Is there any doubt that if the roles were reversed, the Republican Party would absolutely eviscerate the Democrats? This is the party that spent 2 years and tens of millions of dollars to impeach a president over whether or not he lied in a civil deposition. Yet when we are deceived into a war with over 5,000 of our sons and daughters brought home in a box, tens of thousands more of them injured, our national reputation in tatters throughout the world, and a vice president who openly admits he personally ordered the waterboarding of detainees in U.S. custody, Cheney and the Republicans say that no investigation, let alone prosecution, is in order. It is time for all of us to take a step back and look at that flag and remember what it stands for. Too many people have died. Too many people have been injured. Too much money has been spent to just gloss over the last 8 years. This Memorial Day, we honor the sons, daughters, husbands, wives, fathers, and mothers who have served this country with pride and paid the ultimate price. They are the true patriots for which this country owes an incalculable debt. As we honor those that have fallen, we cannot help but think of those who are yet to fall in the days, weeks, and months ahead. Before his death in 1631, the English poet John Donne left us with these words, "Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind. And therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. Let not the death of our sons and daughters be in vain." That has been our show for today. Keep it real.